Are we on, Edie? Okay. Good evening and welcome to the Monroe City Council meeting. This is the regular business meeting for Tuesday, October 14th, 2014. The time is 7 p.m. Edie, will you call the roll, please?
Councilmembers present and establishing the quorum are Hanford, Cudaback, Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, and Garen.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please let the record show that Councilmember Gamble came in at 7:02, just after the Pledge of Allegiance. The first item that we have on our agenda this evening is under announcements and presentations. This is a presentation from the Monroe Public Schools. And Ken?
Good evening, and thank you to the council and mayor and other members of the staff for inviting us here tonight. I'm Ken Hoover, and I'm the superintendent. With me, I have four of my board members, Dirk Chessman, Jason Gamble, Katie Woods,
Jason Gamble, right?
And also with us is John Mannix, who's Assistant Superintendent for Operations, and he's the person who's been leading up kind of the work of the Citizen Task Force with recommendations to the school board. So I have some handouts, one of which is a brown sheet of paper that we've been using as part of our listening tour to gather input from our citizens, and certainly you can use some tonight with us as well. The brown piece of paper basically gives you an opportunity to tell us what you think are really important priorities. Is there something missing from the package that we've been considering, and also any other advice that you might be able to provide to the school board? And there's another document called At a Glance, which we've just updated with some basic information about our schools and school system, how many buildings we have in square footage, the number of students, number of classrooms. One item I like to kind of highlight every once in a while is the size of our monthly payroll. It's a little over $5 million a month. And so we're obviously a fairly big chunk of the economy of the local area as well, the second largest employer. So what I want to do in the presentation, can you move to the next slide, please? Oh, I put the clicker. Okay, great. I want to talk about the fact that the board did a listening tour in 2013, and they got a number of pieces of advice, but they kind of put them together into four basic areas that were the ones that received the most advice from our community. I want to talk a little bit about what they were and what the actions that were taken after that. So one of the things that the community told us that we need to do a better job of telling everyone about the good work that's going on in our schools. In the lean years, we really cut back on our communication budget. We weren't doing our annual calendar and providing that to every family. A number of things have been cut back. And so we started to increase the budget there. You may recall in February, there's this a fairly large report to the community talk about really wonderful things our students were doing. We've also put out a couple of postcards. One of them was about our test results going up. Another one was about freshman success. We've taken John Lombardi, the principal of high school, on tour to many of the groups in the community, talking about the work that the high school's gone through in the last few years to really increase the percentage of ninth graders who are successful as freshmen, because they know that there's plenty of evidence that shows that's a really good indicator of their ability to eventually graduate from high school. Another area that we heard from our community was that they want to see us have even more opportunities for students to be successful than we already have. As a school district, we already kind of leader the path for some fairly innovative programs. Just to mentioned Sky Valley Education Center is one of those. It's the state's largest parent partnership. It's located right here in town. It serves almost 900 students, and over half of them come from outside of our district boundaries. So we've done some things. We expanded a Montessori program, which is a five-day-a-week, all-day, every-day program out of Malfi. Councilman Katterbeck's daughter goes there, but it's a great program for parents who particularly like a Montessori model, and we've now rolled that up so it'll serve fifth grade through fifth grade. We added another grade level at a dual language program at Frank Wagner, and that's a program where, starting with kindergarten, we take two classrooms of kids. They're kind of evenly matched for half the kids being native Spanish speakers and half the kids being native English speakers. They spend each day half of it in a classroom with a teacher who teaches everything in English, and then the other half the day in the classroom with a teacher who teaches all in Spanish. So by the time they get to middle school, we believe they will be biliterate, both able to read and write in Spanish and English. So that's a program that we're expanding. Another one is we actually increased the number of classrooms we have for our gifted and talented kids up at Chain Lake. We now have three self-contained classrooms, where in the past we only had two of those. And then Sky Valley this last year added a new STEM program focused at the middle school level, 6th or 8th grade, and they liked it so much that the parents talked them into rolling it up to so it serves 9th graders again this year. So we've been expanding choices and opportunities for kids in our school system. Another area that we heard from our community was that they think we have really wonderful staff and that we need to support them with additional training and professional development and those kinds of things. So we've gone on a mission to do exactly that. Of course, there's some new requirements that require a lot of training. You probably heard about the fact there's a new teacher evaluation system that we're all using and phasing in our school system, and so there's a lot of training for that. There's also, because our teachers have to basically track and record a lot of professional development in order to maintain their certificates, we came up with a nice online program for them to both register for and keep track of their professional development. And we added a teacher on special assignment to help them, in particular support them if they are new to our district or if they need help learning how to use a framework for teaching, a good teaching that we're using in our district called the Danielson Framework. And then another theme that emerged was one about resource availability. Our community was telling us, you need more resources to do your job. So in February, we put in front of the voters a four-year learning levy that was at the maximum amount the state would allow us to collect, and that passed very nicely, so thanks to the community for that support. We also placed in front of the community a six-year technology levy, because that was one of the areas that our community told us we need help working on that. And that technology levy brings in $1.25 million a year for the next 6 years. We're using the first phase of the money, which doesn't start to collect until the spring, but we're kind of borrowing from one place to cover it this fall. We're getting set up to be as prepared as we can be for kids to take the new Smarter Balance testing in the spring. That's a computer adaptive test, which means that when you answer a question and you get it right, they ask you the next question is harder. If you get it wrong, the next question is easier, and it basically adapts the testing to figure out with a great deal of refinement what your knowledge base is and what your skill gaps are. In the old paper and pencil system that we used previously, you can't do that because every test is the same. So that's something that we have to prepare for. We're really beefing up our infrastructure, our network, and our bandwidth so that we can have reliable computers for the testing window. And we need to get it done ahead of time because our teachers need not only time to practice with that, but our kids need to learn some of the technology and software stuff that's going to be used on the test in order to be comfortable and show their best once the testing window. And then the last thing we heard from our community about resources was that we needed something about our buildings. So a little more than a year ago, the school board asked the citizens to come in and join us and do a study of all of our facilities. And the citizens who participated visited 100% of our schools, walked through them, had checklists for things that they were kind of looking for and inspecting. They also studied demographic trends. They learned a lot about the state construction assistance program and just did a lot of work. They came up with a report in June that was presented to the school board, and then in July they also supplied a written report. And they came up with a series of recommendations, and I want you to follow.
We'll have training in our technology lab.
There, that's the one I want, right there. Thank you. So they came up with a series of recommendations for us. The top project on the list is to renovate Park Place Middle School. As you know, it used to be the high school, built in the middle of the 1970s. It's certainly, and as a, in terms of its physical condition, needs some work, but also because of the design and the changes in education over the intervening almost 40 years, a lot of changes have occurred. We need to change things up so that we can meet the needs of education today. And that's a very large project. There's some boards out in the hallway here that show one of the concept pictures, but basically the idea is to keep some of the main spaces on that campus that were either added after the original construction or there makes more sense to renovate them than tear them down. An example of that would be the high school size gym. If we were to build a new gym, it would be much smaller because we build it for middle school specifications. It's actually less expensive to keep the gym, gut it, and rebuild it from the inside out than it is to build a new gym. So that's some of the things that that concept includes. Number two on the list is to catch up on small maintenance projects. Those are examples of those are things like replacing a roof when it's time to replace a roof, heating systems, lighting systems, all kinds of system things wear out over time, you need to replace them. And so we currently have a list of about $17 million, but obviously that list includes some of the projects that are on the list, so you wouldn't have to do an entire $17 million with the job done, because if you do Park Place Middle School, you've knocked off a lot of things on our list. So that's just an example of how that might work. Another recommendation was to consolidate and expand Frank Wagner Elementary School. Right now we've got kids crossing the campus to go to classes in the Wagner Center. We have a gym that we use over there. We have a computer room and a library. We also have kids in 8 portables right off of Main Street. And those are some of our older portables, so they really vary in their condition. So it'd be nice to build some new construction, add on to the West Campus, and get all the kids into one spot at Frank Wagner. Another project is to expand Hidden River Middle School, and the reason we need to do that is because we can't serve all of our middle school population in one school at Park Place. It's actually, the design model we have has about 800 to 850 kids at Park Place. That leaves us with 400 or 500 kids to put out at another school. And right now Hidden River has 430 students in it, and really can't deal with much more than that because of the size of some of the core facilities and those kinds of things. And we're currently using 5 portable classrooms on the parking lot for from specialized classrooms like science and art that weren't able to fit into the original building. So another phase would expand that facility and allow us to have the right kind of spaces for kids, but also serve the number of kids we need to serve. Another recommendation was to reduce our use of portable classrooms. We currently have about 36 classrooms in the district with kids in it. That's a little over 900 kids who each day are in portables. And the proposal was that we put some money into reducing the number of portables. We wouldn't eliminate them completely, but we tried to reduce the amount we're required to use today. And then the last one above the red line is to finish the ball fields at Monroe High School. I'm excited to report that it looks like we've secured enough funding to do the phase one project, which is the fast pitch multi-use field up at the high school. We'll be having money to do the basic part of that facility. The bond would finish off the rest of them so that all three fields would be all-weather turf and have lighting and those kinds of things, so it could be great for community use. Number seven is to modernize and expand Salem Woods Elementary School. That's our oldest elementary school that hasn't been reworked, and it's starting to really show some symptoms of its age. We're worried about the heat pumps going out at any time, and it has great difficulty even today managing a comfortable temperature for a number of our classrooms. Lots of other challenges with that school, but as you know, most of the growth in our community is occurring north of Highway 2, and so we'd be looking at opportunities where we can to expand our current school so that we can continue to serve all the students who show up. Another recommendation was to do something about the administration building. It's going to celebrate its 100th birthday in a short while, 2016. And then the last recommendation was that we purchase land for future schools and or to add on to some of the existing schools. So those are the recommendations from the Citizens Committee. The board has been doing a lot of listening tours like this one. I think the number that Rosemary told me the other day was we're up to 38 so far. Is that right? 38? About 250 people that we talked to in those kinds of settings, although that's not counting the chamber today where we had about 60 people, so maybe it's over 300. But in addition to that, the school board is trying to get out into the community, anyone who will meet with them. There's a new software program we're using that you may have seen a survey on called Thought Exchange, and it's the one that lets you provide comments and then comes back to you later, and you get to put stars on comments that you think are most appropriate. The next step in the process on Thought Exchange is to actually go out with a couple of scenarios, packages, if you will, of what a bond program might look like, and ask people to provide advice on those two scenarios about things they like and don't like about the two scenarios. So we think we'll get a lot of input. The board's kind of planning for December to make a decision about what to put on a package, and then, of course, it has to go to the voters in April. And our last slide, there we go. So why are we listening tour now? Katie, where'd you go? Hanging out behind the door.
I am. So why now? The reason that we're wanting to do this now is because we have a great opportunity because in 2016 we are paying off our current bonds, so we can get a lot of this work done without an increase. And so that's why now is the time to go out for the bonds. And we, like Dr. Hoover said, is we haven't made all of our decisions. That's why we need to hear input from all of our community. And so we really appreciate that you let us come here today. And that's what these forums are for. And so if you can give us your feedback, anything that we may have forgotten on the list, anything that you would like to perceive the higher priority on the list, any feedback that you can give us will be really helpful in our decision making. And then I know you covered the Thought Exchange, and that will be out in the next week or so. So anybody can give us their email and we will send it out to you. Otherwise, there will be a link on the district website.
So now we're ready for questions.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. When will the final what is and what isn't in be decided?
December.
And you probably just said that, but I'm asking again.
December.
Okay. That's within 2 months. Excellent.
Yes. So that's why it's really important to get the feedback, so that will help us in determining what goes in. And with the Thought Exchange, it is different scenarios that we have possibly talked amongst ourselves about and with the communities.
And when can we expect to see it on? What would be the target date then for a ballot? Would be April?
April 27th.
So April.
It's the special election date in
April. Okay, very good. Great, thank you.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thanks. Thank you for the presentation. As always, love hearing from you. Having kids at three different schools currently, Frylands, Hidden River, and the high school, have been very pleased with our experience thus far. I've had kids in the school system for several years now and will for several more. Like 20 years. So have been very pleased with everything we've experienced so far. The new principal at Hidden River, Brett Willey, mm-hmm. doing a fantastic job. Really pleased with the public schools that we've experienced. So wholly behind you and doing ready to help out however we can as a council. So.
Thank you.
Councilmember Cuddeback.
Thank you. I wanted to add my thanks for you coming tonight and reporting. And just thank you for always looking at new programs and new things that you can do that will improve, you know, education for our kids. The STEM, adding the STEM Academy, wonderful. And the dual language program and expanding that in Montessori. So kudos to the district for looking for new opportunities to help educate the kids.
One thing that we're really proud of in this district is that we are always looking for more opportunities. Mm-hmm. We always want to have multiple pathways and as many ways we can get kids to learn and be excited about learning is what we're.
Right. Appreciate it.
Anything else, Council? Thank you both very much for coming out and sharing the information this evening and for all your hard work. And Councilmember Gamble?
Oh, it's okay.
It's all good.
Oh, I just was gonna say thanks as well. I really, you know, appreciate all the hard work. Thank you to the board members for all the, I know you guys put in a lot of tireless volunteer time for schools, and it's very much appreciated. I love the diversity around the educational programs, but then also the sport. We've talked a lot about sports fields and just those opportunities here, what it does from, you know, we know what it does for schools, and there's a lot of studies that show the link between grades and how much sports and the arts can bring for a child. But then also when you look at it from a city's perspective and our park systems, just the economic development that's associated with that and the awareness that it brings. So, you know, definitely interested, you know, to love to see that number 6 item on there in conjunction with all the additional school programs.
Indeed.
On, you know, completing those facilities and kind of the partnership with the city continue that because I think it really will help the valley the more of those those fields that we can use all year round would be fantastic.
Spoken like a coach.
Thank you.
Just a second, we have another one.
Oh, one more.
Councilmember Cuddeback.
Thank you. Dr. Hoover, could you speak a little bit about the youth re-engagement program at Everett Community College? That's new, and so people might not know about that.
I think you're aware of we have an alternative high school called Leaders in Learning, mm-hmm. and in the past we've served as many as over 200 students at a time in that program. Last year when we had 120 students, we had reconfigured our model a bit, and Sultan School District has also had started an alternative school, so that's some reason why it's smaller. But one of the things that is kind of a new trend for anyone in high school is you have to pass tests to graduate. You have to pass a bunch of tests. A geometry in-course exam, an algebra in-course exam, a biology in-course exam, and then a reading and writing state exam. So 5 tests. And also you have to earn all the right credits. And the Leaders in Learning program was really organized around helping kids earn credits. But some of the kids who show up there were so low in skills that their capacity to get the points to pass weren't all of those state tests. Pretty difficult for some of the kids, especially if they show up with, say, a 4th grade level of math skills and an 8th grade level of reading and writing skills. And so we have partnered for a long time with both the Shoreline Community College and the Everett Community College, and they run programs on their campuses called youth re-engagement programs. They work with kids who are relatively either low in credits or low in skills, and they bring them up to the point where they can eventually go to college. And while they're at it, they earn high school credit. They don't have to follow the same rules that we're following, so they can do things a little differently. This last year, we talked Everett into offering a program right here at the Lake High Building, and I think they're serving 22 students. And if you're 19 years old and you've only got 2 credits, it's probably better for you to go there and get a GED and or learn some of the skills to eventually go to college and get a part-time college credit under your belt than it is to try to work, continue to work on a high school diploma that might take you years to finish. And so we really have a great partnership with the Everett Community College, and it's really exciting that they would listen to us and bring the program directly to our kids here in town who often have great difficulty traveling all the way to Everett to get help. So it's a great program.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for asking. And thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can I just thank Mayor Collins for serving on the committee too?
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Nancy. Okay, the next item that we have on the agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except for any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. And as we start the public comment period, please note that it's important that every person for and against a particular issue feel free to be here and to speak. I respectfully request that you help me maintain the decorum of these chambers, and please address your comments to the full council, and please direct your comments to the issue or policy of concern. We ask that the audience remain from clapping or commenting from the floor, and lastly, please maintain the decorum as you leave the chambers today. The first person that we have on the agenda to speak during public comment is Thomas Minnick. Mr. Minnick.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
First thing, Mr. Mayor, I would like to request a little bit of latitude regarding I'm Pastor Thomas Minnick of Heritage Baptist Fellowship. I live at 13789 194th Drive Southeast in Monroe. I'm speaking tonight because I'm weary. I'm weary to the bone of a constant barrage of misinformation, intentional distortion of facts that have surrounded the rezone of our church's property on Highway 2. I'm willing to charitably allow that some of the inaccuracies come from well-meaning people and simply been misinformed. I feel sorry for those people. They've been told that any development of our property will cause their houses to come crashing down the slope, and that's patently absurd. The fearmongers that perpetuate that myth are participating in a basest kind of deception. They spin stories that fly in the face of every scientific and technical study that's been done on the property, and they've dismissed the science because they don't want it to be so, and because it threatens to take away their view. They've been looking down from their decks on our beautiful property for so long, they've mistakenly come to believe it's their own. Well, it isn't. It's ours. It's private property upon which responsible development has always been labeled. Well, some of that misinformation has come from people who know better. They're keenly aware that the things they say are not accurate, but they keep saying them anyway. We have a word for that where I come from. But let's set the record straight. Now, first, a personal warning. In the last meeting 3 weeks ago, Council Member Kovac, you questioned whether anyone else in the city supported this rezone. You remarked that you hadn't received letters or seen people come here to speak in support of Heritage, and I'd like to respond to that. The fact is, we've already been there, done that, and got the t-shirt. During our long history with this city, we've had hearings where we packed out the chamber, filled up the lobby, and spilled out onto the sidewalk for lack of room. People from our congregation and neighbors from the community came to this podium and first asked, finally demanded, that Heritage be treated with respect, that we be allowed access to the same process available to everyone else, and that this property be rezoned as requested. We did that over and over and over again. Finally, after continually being denied even access to the process, our leadership team made a decision that I would continue working on this project, but we would not include others in our church. And we did that, quite frankly, because Our church has been busy. We've been busy building an orphanage and a school in central Honduras, the second poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere. We've been busy providing basic necessities and life-saving medical care to the impoverished Inca people in the mountains of that country. And we've been busy helping needy and desperate families right here in the valley through our Project Blessing Outreach. We've given tens of thousands of dollars to help people in crisis. A young couple overwhelmed by medical expenses because their infant son suffered from a rare and life-threatening disorder, and we helped. We purchased a car for a young single mom so she could get a job, provide for herself and her new baby. Families who needed money to keep a roof over their heads. Boxes of groceries for people who had lost their jobs. People who aren't a part of our church family, but who are our neighbors in this community that we love and serve. And we've been busy providing teams of volunteers to help families build their own homes through the awesome work of Housing Hope. Throughout this whole time, we've continued to share a message of hope and restoration through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. So no, we've not provided you with crowds of people demanding that you listen to us, but they're there, and it matters to them. They're just busy. Several people came up to this podium and loudly complained that the city was subsidizing the cost of this rezone for the benefit of our church. They insisted that the city had paid all the costs associated with our application, that we've received some kind of free ride. And that's absolutely untrue. We at Heritage do not have a spirit of entitlement, as someone suggested. We paid our own way, every bit of it. In fact, we've paid more than any other applicant has ever paid for a non-project rezone application. Nobody in the history of our city has been asked to produce such an extensive and expensive EIS for a non-project application. But we were asked to do that, and we did it. And while the EIS was prepared for the city and has now become the city's document, it was Heritage who paid for it, all of it. And to suggest otherwise reveals either an ignorance of the facts or a propensity to distort the facts for one's own purposes, and neither is acceptable. The staff time associated with processing our application was the same as any other application from any other applicant. That's their job. That's why the city funds that position and pays that salary. It's not unique to us. It happens with every application. Some members of the audience, and it seems some members of the council, seem to think that the city's expenses incurred in responding to these appeals amount to the city subsidizing our application, and nothing could be further from the truth. If you think the city has spent too much money on legal fees and staff costs in responding to those appeals, don't blame us. Blame them. In reality, by spending all this money to respond to the neighbors' never-ending appeals, the city is in effect subsidizing the actions of a few people who are intent on using city resources to protect their view.
Pastor Minnick, I need to ask you to wrap up. I'm sorry. We're at 6 minutes.
The $100,000 in legal costs the city has already paid is not because of us. Our actions haven't required any significant city resources. Their actions have done that. And they appear to be fully prepared to require the city to spend even more on their behalf. And I want to say it's the height of hypocrisy to initiate actions that require expensive responses from the city and then blame those expenses on us. And I'm incredulous that anybody could be swayed by that kind of spin. I looked at tonight's council packet. It shows an estimate that is outrageously inflated. It includes a plan to basically start all over again. Repeating work that's already been done is already paid for, proposes to do work on issues that the board has already ruled on in the city's favor. The city staff has a proposal in their hands that will only cost the city less than $25,000. Maybe somebody on the council needs to ask, where's that one? Finally, I want to say that the city must respond to the board's actions and provide the information necessary to keep this rezone valid. Our church did everything right in this excruciating 3.5-year process. We followed all the rules. We did everything you asked. To decide at this point to not take action that can easily correct the board's ruling, to in effect negate the decision of the council after we've spent all these years and all this money doing as the city required. To do that is to break faith with the people of Monroe. Citizens of Monroe have a right to expect this council will follow through on the actions of the previous council on a decision like this. We have a right to expect continuity from one administration to another on the completion of land use applications, and to do otherwise strikes at the heart of the trust the people must have in their representatives. So tonight I respectfully encourage the council, see through all the smoke screens, stand up against the political bullying, and do the right thing. Instruct the staff to request an extension and move forward, providing the information necessary to satisfy the board. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The next person that we have on the agenda to speak this evening is Lowell Anderson. Mr. Anderson, will you please come forward and state your name for the record?
Lowell Anderson, 129 East Rivermont Drive, Monroe, Washington, 98272. My comments regarding East Monroe rezone. Council members Goring, Camp, Davis, and Hanford, you're at a crossroad. Will you represent the vast majority of Monroe taxpayers and end the rezone, or will you go forward with the property owner as rezone? The accumulated costs, including the open government lawsuit adding $157,000 plus $75,000 in legal fees, bring the total so far to approximately $427,000, plus the free environmental impact statement the city provided the property owner. The 42.8-acre site is located approximately 1 mile east of town, separated by a ridge, and located in a bowl adjacent to the north of SR2. It is also located within a drainage basin and floodplain of the Skycomish River. The 10-acre portion of the 11-acre development land for Pace Engineering, and I do not agree with Pace Engineering's assessment, is located in the middle of a floodplain and zoned AE, flood hazard, and is several feet below the base flood elevation of 67 feet. This property is further encumbered by three wetlands, nearly all of which are a Category 2, a native growth protection easement, a shoreline, a Type 1 stream slough connected to the mighty Skycomish River via culverts, which is an old oxbow that surrounds the property. The property is also home to endangered species. The steep slopes to the north have many single-family homes along the ridge. The property is not served with water, sewer, natural gas, or electricity. The property is not pedestrian accessible. Access to SR2, the highway of death, is troubling. The cost estimate to develop 11 acres is $11 million plus the cost of property and years of obtaining permits. A cost comparison of North Kelsey property to the East Monroe property is Walmart, 24 acres, about $7.17 a square foot. Providence, 5 acres, approximately $11.48 a square foot. East Monroe, 11 acres, approximately $28.16 a square foot. Four times Walmart, 2.5 times Providence. I have the statistics here, but being a technotard, I didn't bring the proper drive, so all I have is a piece of paper, which I could leave with you. But remember, this is a non-project. Probably the reason it's a non-project is because of the atrocious cost and the permitting process that will take years to develop. The prospect of any return on the city's huge investment is slim at best and light years away. If council members Goring, Camp, Davis, and Hanford vote to go forward with option B, another environmental impact statement, the city's total cost would be in the neighborhood to do a correct environmental impact statement, be close to $550,000 to $600,000, and the city is not assured they will prevail. Again, you're not assured that you will prevail. Monroe citizens are outraged, as you saw at the council meeting September 23rd, 2014. Council member Goring's attempt at justification for proceeding with this action is lame at best. The zoning change from limited open space to general commercial is a recipe for disaster. I am concerned alterations in the floodplain may cause my home or my neighbor's home to slide down the steep slopes. In my opinion, improper zoning is at the heart of tragedies like Oso. Thank you. And these are the calculations, and if anybody wants to look at the estimate, I've been an estimator for many years, more than happy to debate it with you, but there they are. Sorry I didn't bring a disc. Thank you for your attention. Have a good evening.
Thank you. The next person that we have to speak is Dave Demarest. Mr. Demarest, will you come forward and state your name for the record?
My name is David Demarest. I live at 19311 130th. Did I do that?
Oh, you're full.
Thanks. Sorry, Brad. 19311 130th Place Southeast, Snohomish. While it's Snohomish address, it's just up the hill outside of town. Mayor Thomas, members of the council, thank you for your time this evening. My comments will be brief. And my comments are going to be related to East Monroe. And I really want to focus on two main points, process and cost. When this item was last docketed, it's my recollection the council did so based on the belief that the applicant was deserving of the opportunity to go through the amendment process. Or in other words, entitled to, and I'll paraphrase here, make the case for an amendment from limited open space to general commercial. Since then, the applicants not only had one chance to make that case, but two. First time was under the leadership of the city, with the bulk of the cost of that effort borne by the taxpayers of the city of Monroe, and the effort failed. The second time, and Pastor Minnick is absolutely correct, the applicant took the lead and bore the majority of the cost. No question about it. At least until the point where that process broke down and it became a burden of the city to defend what had been done. And again, at taxpayer cost now. And again, that effort failed. You're now contemplating the expenditure of further taxpayer dollars to redo the EIS and associated comprehensive planning amendment process for what is now a third try to, and again I paraphrase, make the case. It's my understanding the cost of this process will likely be in excess of $200,000. And if, when I say that, I include costs of the EIS, staff time, attorney costs, etc. And again, at the expense of the city of Monroe taxpayers. And there are no assurances that this effort will again fail. Perhaps the problem is that the property itself can't, and again I paraphrase, make the case. I've been here for a long time. In my recollection, I can't think of another instance when city dollars, taxpayer dollars, have been spent on one private endeavor. As a taxpayer in the city of Monroe, and while I don't live here, I do own two homes and I do pay taxes here within the city. I'm asking to acknowledge that the proposal is at more than a fair opportunity and that it has failed. It's time to stop. It's time to stop spending taxpayer dollars on this proposal and move forward with other pressing issues. There are plenty of matters to spend our money on. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
The next person that we have signed up is Steve Jensen. Mr. Jensen, will you come forward and state your name for the record?
My name is Steve Jensen. I live at 17041 155th Street Southeast. I do need to preface this by saying that I am a member of the Planning Commission, but I'm not here on their behalf. I'm here just as a standing citizen of Monroe. I'm going to repeat briefly my comments from last time. Just a reminder that you should not feel in any way like you're obligated to continue forward because money's already been spent. The example being Seattle, they voted many times to do a new monorail, expansion of the monorail for years and years. They started collecting taxes. They started spending money. When the real tax bills started showing up and showing increase in spending far beyond their estimates, the voters made a wise decision in reversing course, canceling the project, and stopped spending money. Even though they then lost $100 million or more, they stopped the course, they stopped the bleeding. So don't feel like you have to keep going. You can reverse course. There is precedent for that action. I wanted to mention also that the, I don't know if you've seen, surely you know of the comp plan of the city and how the this council is obligated, in phrases where they must abide by the policies, not just may abide. Some of the elements in the comp plan call out the current state being that the area, this is being the eastern city limits, Rivermont Ridge, that area, the comp plan states that it is significantly impacted by wetlands and is subject to local flooding due to restricted drainage to the Skykomish River. Regardless of other facts and science and anything else, this states the city's position on this land is that it is subject to flooding. The future vision goes on to say it does try to acknowledge that while impacted by environmental and access issues, the area is within city limits and could be considered for urban density development. Thus, you might suggest that it could be. It doesn't say it should be. It says it could be. So you have latitude, even in the comp plan, to choose to not pursue the rezone. You're going to be presented tonight, I believe, with some numbers from the city estimates. I've seen the numbers ranging from 130,000, 135,000 up to 190,000 in this. There might be discussion amongst you about trying to justify the lower end of those numbers, but truthfully, since when has any government project ever cost the low end of any budget, or even how often does it even meet the budget? When you hear the numbers, I hope you will seriously consider that it's very likely going to be a low-end number by the time this whole process is done. So I, as a concerned citizen and a tax-paying citizen, I would urge you to consider that it's time to stop the bleeding in this essentially boondoggle and let's put our city's money to something else. There's so many more important things we have to spend money on than this venture. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next person we have signed up to speak is Douglas Hamer. Mr. Hamer, will you come forward and state your name for the record?
Douglas Hamer,
1500
Rivermont Ridge, Skykomish. I live at 21122 Calvin Road.
Producing an environmental impact statement that paints the East Monroe property as suitable for commercial development is going to take a good deal more than supplemental action, because virtually all of the results in the EIS were based on the ludicrous assumption that the most likely development on the property under limited open space zoning is a 500-member church, a gym, and a daycare center. That was the foundational core of that EIS. And that is the one of the major problems that the Growth Management Board had with this EIS. It was chock full of baloney. And no matter how thin you slice it, it will still be baloney. So basically, the whole EIS is going to need to be redone. The requirements that the findings of an EIS or environmental impact statement be based on reality is not a precedent-setting, stringent requirement that begs for legal action to protect the rights of cities. And if your position is that this particular environmental impact statement went way above and beyond what should be required of any non-project EIS, and therefore the Growth Management Board overreached their mandate in finding the EIS inadequate, then you are basing your position on a fundamental misunderstanding of the issue. The adequacy of an EIS is not dependent on how many hundreds of pages it is, or how many color illustrations it contains, or even how many experts are payroll to produce it, or how slick the presentation. The adequacy of an EIS is entirely dependent on its accuracy. Washington courts have defined an EIS as a full disclosure document. They have stated that there is no question
that the accuracy and truthfulness of the information in an EIS is of paramount importance to the ultimate approval or disapproval. And that is because the purpose of an EIS is to reasonably inform decision makers, even if the majority of those decision makers made up their decision long before the EIS and have no particular desire to be informed otherwise. Throughout this long process, I myself have learned a great deal about this property. And every additional bit of information that has made the idea of commercial development there seem more insane than before. But the one piece of information that stands out to me as the Achilles heel of any commercial development is the fact that without relying on acres of blackberry bushes to provide an additional 7 feet of elevation, there's virtually no compensatory flood storage capacity available on that property. Certainly not enough to justify commercial development. The EIS was accurate when it stated the property is basically flat. And you have to maintain a 1% slope so that fish are not stranded in a flood, which makes half the slight elevations that are there unavailable for compensatory flood storage. Now maybe you have in your heads that because the city has not officially adopted FEMA's designation of the property as 100-year floodplain, that the end game for a developer will be to treat the property as 500-year floodplain and the flood storage will not be an issue. That strategy will not fare any better in a future EIS than it has in the last two, because the reality is that an old oxbow of this size, undiked, and considering the flood history and flood potential of the Skycomish River, is and has been for a 100-year floodplain for at least the past 100 years, not just since FEMA designated it as such in 2007. Now, I have respect for all of you people's willingness to serve the community in this capacity. It's not an easy job. It's a huge time commitment. It doesn't pay much. And it puts a big target on your chest for any complaints that the rest of us have about the way the city is run. But I would think you would not want that targeting or the resultant personal attacks to be based on speculation. So for your own benefit, as well as the community's, I think you need to supply the missing information here and articulate, not in executive session, but in public, exactly why it is you believe that spending more taxpayer dollars and staff time pursuing this rezone is so critically important that other endeavors that most of us would see as more immediately beneficial to the city should be sent to the back of the line. And finally, if you do insist on playing the part of Sisyphus and trying to roll this boulder back up the hill, only to see it back at the bottom again eventually, I'd like to remind you that it is a 40% slope. And with a history of instability. So I would just urge you, from the bottom of my heart, let it go. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next person that I have signed up to speak is Kinder Smoots. Please come forward and state your name for the record, please.
Good evening. My name is Kinder Smoots, 17511 80th Drive Northeast, Arlington, Washington. Good evening. I love this town. I absolutely love it. I was born here. I was raised here. I'm a graduate of Monroe High School, and now I serve as a CEO of a little nonprofit charity that serves adults with disabilities here in Monroe. But I'm here tonight on behalf of my mother. I'd like to start by reading you a portion of the Monroe City Council business meeting minutes dated February 1st, 2011. Quote, Mayor Zimmerman commented that our city is built on the relationships, connections, and commitment on a daily basis. Without those connections, interactions, and commitments to our community would fail. Through a proclamation, he wanted to recognize one individual who has committed and dedicated herself to the citizens in Monroe and the Tualco Valley for the last 32 years. He read the proclamation claiming February 5th as Janet Osborne Day and presented the framed proclamation to Miss Osborne. Janet Osborne is my mom, and I've been here at City Hall several times and often hear her referred to as the lady on Park Street. I want to assure each of you that she is much more than that, and I'm here tonight to make sure that each one of you are aware of her situation. Last year was the third occurrence of a city water main explosion derived from the water main located right in front of her house. My mom suffered many damages to her home the first two times, and the third was nearly unbearable. My mom had to move out. Not only did this water main flood her home, ruin the floor, the insulation, the walls, portions of her roof, the sheetrock, the siding, which was new, the brand new coat of paint, and all the landscaping that us kids had just redone for her. But she wanted to save money, so she went and stayed with a friend, rather than staying in a rental apartment or a hotel, because that's the kind of person she is. The city's response to these three situations have been horrible. Each time she has been referred to approach her homeowner's insurance for all the work, repairs, and reimbursement to the damages to her home. Just to get a response from the city has been difficult for my 72-year-old widowed mom. Each time there has been a promise of a better solution. 2 weeks ago, this water main broke again for the fourth time. Jim from the city came by and made a short-term repair to the new problem, which he described to me as a different water line that runs all the way down Kelsey, ending at this fire hydrant on Park Street. However, to date, no phone calls have been made to my mom from the city about resolving the damages, and this is the fourth time to her home. Now, my mom's health is not the best, I admit. I came later that afternoon to look at the damages, and her blood pressure was over 200. The fire department was called, and she was admitted to Valley General Hospital. Friday morning, I stopped by City Hall to see what the holdup was, because in past experience, the water damage sits for 2 weeks, mold sets in, and no one seems to know anything about Janet Osborne. So when I finally was able to speak with Jim, he said, "I don't understand. I came out that morning and talked to your mom, and she was so nice and polite. She wasn't upset at all." I explained to him, "That's just the way my mom is. She's very gentle and kind. But this person you've chosen the city to honor does not deserve to be railroaded. My mom has explained to you, Mayor Thomas, in a private meeting how difficult this has been, what a hardship has been for her to go through this three times, and yet there's been no acceptance of responsibility or acknowledgement from the city or permanent resolution to these city water lines that continue to explode, wreck, and destroy her property. Last year, the Snohomish County Assessor's Office valued her home now at $30,000, which has also been validated by Regina, the City of Monroe Insurance Assessor. The minor repair that was made 2 weeks ago, I was told by Jim, is not a long-term solution. He said the line is coming all the way down Kelsey and it's insufficient. It needs to be moved down, passed through the park and into the trees down there. He said, though, it will take more than a year to get surveying done, permits, and implement the construction. And we agreed this line that's insufficient is a ticking time bomb, which we believe will send our mom over the edge. So I'm making three requests tonight to each council member here. Number one, take personal interest in this situation. Number two, see that there be a permanent resolution brought as quickly as possible before the line explodes again. There's time to expedite the work that needs to be done, and I'd ask you to assign someone to follow up on the progress. And then number three, consider doing what is right over the entire situation. The value of my mom's house and property has completely changed strictly due to these explosions that happen before 6 a.m. in the morning. And take responsibility for what the damages the city water lines have done. I've left my information here. And I'd love it if council members called my mom and gave a lending ear and offered to do what you can to help resolve the problem. And please initiate, show her how much you appreciate all she's already done in this community and honor that proclamation that was made. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, are there any other members of the public that would like to come? Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, thank you. I don't believe we can just go on without not addressing that.
That's fine.
So thank you for sharing that, Kinder. On behalf of council, we apologize for the damage that's happened, for whatever obviously heartache and stress that has been caused from that. I'm speaking on behalf of everyone up here that we're sorry that that happened. We will definitely I'd like to direct staff to address this if you haven't already, since you've already talked to her.
Yeah, there was a fourth break that happened. Was it 2 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago. We will be following up with staff tomorrow, so that I can find out exactly where things are with that. So.
Yeah, I think tomorrow would be urgent, and then give us an update next week. Would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments, Council? Okay. Are there any other members of the public that would like to come forward to speak? So, in the back, you had your hand up first. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Shane Bradley. I live on 21104 Calhoun Road. Tonight, as we open the meeting tonight, we recited the Pledge of Allegiance. In that pledge, we stated that we wanted justice for all. I agree. Everyone should have justice. The pastor should have justice and equal access to the services of the city, state, county, nation, that anyone else should. At the same time, there's a lot of loaded words that were used. Things like being bullied and feeling sorry for people. You know, when it comes to feeling sorry for people, I have to feel sorry for someone that was sold a bill of goods. I grew up down in Florida, and as a child, I had to hear lots of stories about people in the Boston Swampland from the north who came down and found out it was useless. Now, looking over the side of my property, I see land that has a lot of water on it. And given the state's environmental viewpoint, I can't imagine that anyone would ever look at that land and think they'd be able to do anything with it other than on the animal. Now, if I'm a fool for looking at reality, looking at water standing on property, and thinking that it's a wetland because it's wet, well, then I'm a fool. But one of the other things that's really important is to understand that there is nothing wrong with failing. We went through this process as a city, spent a lot of money on it. State came back and said, this is wetland. You can't build it. Justify that it isn't wetland and meet all of our environmental responses. You can build them. You know, one of the things that we do with the group I'm at Microsoft is we have a statement, or our philosophy is fail fast. Because it's a lot better to figure out that something's not going to work, it's going to cost a lot of money, and it's not going to have a return if you can do that in 2 months, than spending 6 months or a year's worth of resources coming to that conclusion. So if you don't think that there's a way that this is going to benefit the city and everyone involved, and honestly believe in your heart that it's going to be good for the city and justify the expenses going forward, that it's a fiscally responsible thing to do. And not just a matter of saying, well, you know, my God, we should be able to do it however we want. Satan damn, your call. But I know how I would sleep well at night myself.
Thank you. Somebody had their hand up out there. Please
take My name is Lisa Dollar, 209-30 East Vermont. I am not going to bombard you with what people have been standing up here all night saying, but I am going to address something that frustrates me. I love Jesus Christ too, and I can tell you that when I believe in something, I will come. And so to stand here earlier tonight and say, we love Jesus Christ, we serve in other ways so our people don't have time to be here, I don't honor that for one moment. If you stand by something, you will be there. Not saying throwing Jesus around to support something or not support something is right. I will tell you that, yes, my interest in this property is biased. We own a home. We love where we live. I can also tell you that before we bought our home here, we read the EIS. We were in the planner's office. We talked to them. We went over things. So I don't have unknowledge, but I wanted to give you a fresh face because I know that this has been going on forever. There's been research. But I have to tell you that as a new citizen to your city, it's really disappointing. It's disappointing to read online, to speak to people. There is a sense of failure. There is a sense of distrust here, and it's really bad. I mean, Monroe could be a beautiful place to live, and that's why my husband and I chose to invest here. It's a downtown that's crap right now, but it could be cute. It could attract people here. It could be a great pathway through to the past and ski season. And there's so much that can be done to attract tourism and things. And the fact that we're wasting money on something right now is so small. Do we need another commercial property in Monroe? I beg you to look at all the empty storefronts. I've only lived here 6 months. Do people not see that have been invested in this town for longer? And I just would urge you to, I've only been here 6 months, and in that time, not just from people on our street, from all over the city, from talking to people, there is distrust in this council, and that's really sad. This isn't a huge town. This isn't Seattle. I mean, this is small enough that there should be trust here. There should be an openness to hear what people that live here have to say. And that's all. I'm not going to bombard you with numbers. You've heard them. I've seen them. But I just think that there's a point where you have to honor your citizens and honor what they're calling for. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Hi, I'm Erin Angus Snapka. I live on Mill Street in Monroe, and I've been to a few of the meetings. I was listening to Pastor Renee speak, and I'm a little bit confused. There hasn't been any documentation of this $25,000 solution. I mean, Paul is the city planner. I've been looking through this paperwork. I mean, it seems as though, you know, he probably knows what he's talking about. He's probably not just making it up because he doesn't want to do the work.
That was a burp, actually.
Yeah. Sorry. I don't think it's appropriate to focus on local citizens to complain that we want things to be pretty. I mean, it's the Groves Management Board that is rejecting the EIS. It's not a popularity contest. It's not the people on the Hill. It's a flooded area. I mean, it seems like an environmental impact study that contemplates turning a floodplain, an area that's clearly full of water right now, into someplace where you could put a grocery store. Maybe that ought to be expensive relative to other EISs. I can certainly find many other sure things that the city could spend his money on. This week, I took my kids out to the Burberry Lane Children's Park, and it's really a mess. There were beer cans everywhere, and some of the little benches had been used. And I think it was spit, you know, as target practice. There's just so many more things, sure things, that would clearly improve quality of life that we could spend our money on.
Thank you. Okay, are there any other members of... Are there any other members of the public that would like to come forward to speak? Anybody? All right. Seeing none, we are going to go ahead and move on now to the consent agenda. Council? Councilmember Cutterback?
Yes, I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Cutterback. I have a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. The next item on the agenda is under unfinished business. This is AB 14128, East Monroe Options. And Paul, is that you?
Thank you, Mayor. Tonight the staff and I are here to discuss and work with you to consider options for responding to this final decision in order from the Growth Management Hearing Board. Best to meet the requirements for complying with this decision, we prepared a draft scope of work and estimated cost that you've seen in the report to you prior to the meeting. We have undertaken some work to develop a detailed scope of work by the staff. And we did hire Petit, our on-call environmental consultant, to independently review and verify the scope of work that we had suggested based on their understanding of the decision and the order, their take on what was required to meet compliance with the board. So that I think you know that the core of the work is really related to additional environmental analysis that would include more detailed development alternatives and the impacts, trying to measure the impacts of those alternatives on the entire site as interpreted by the board. And to further work or evaluate critical areas, wetlands, there's work in geotechnical work, hydrology, the flooding related to the stream flow, and the potential landslide potential of the steep slopes along that north side of the property. Which he'd also provided at our request their take on estimated cost for this work, the $135,000 to $195,000. That does seem like quite a bit of cost, but there's a significant range from low to high due to the fact that we've not really determined finally what exactly will be required for those specialized studies, the geotechnical and the hydrological work. When that's determined, we'll have a firmer number. But in order to complete, I say this, we think that is what will be needed to respond to this compliance. And part of this also, as you know, is that in order to complete this supplementary EIS, we will have to ask that you allow us to request a six-month extension from the board so we can meet the requirements of the work. Right now it's due in February of 2015 for a response, and this will extend it to August of 2015 should you choose to move forward. We're here to answer questions as best we can and respond and help you make some kind of decision.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Paul, thanks for, and Melissa, for providing this scope of work and more information that council asked for on September 23rd. Based on the information you're bringing back tonight, based on what I heard on the 23rd, the emails, phone calls, and based on what I heard tonight, and I appreciate the comment, fail fast, and I also like to learn from failure, I'm going to make a motion. And I will make motion to comply with the final decision in order of the growth management hearings and authorize the mayor to take all appropriate and necessary action to convey to the growth management hearings board in the city's intention to no longer pursue the East Monroe comprehensive plan amendment or rezone.
Second.
And my hope is that we can put this issue to rest and move on.
I have a first from Councilmember Cutterback and a second from Councilmember Rasmussen.
And if I make one comment, my hope is that I do hear from other council members tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard from some on why they support this or why they don't, and it would be nice if we can hear from council members their opinion.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion?
Well, I've got a lot. Why don't you go ahead first? You weren't here last time.
No, that's okay. I'm still taking notes. Go with that.
We're here because we want to make sure you're here.
Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. First of all, I want to appreciate the fact that we have the ability to have all the council members here to make a decision, mm-hmm. which is what we had asked for, to be have all of us here for a decision of this type. It's a council decision to make whether we end up right where we were, where we ended on the 16th or not. It needs to be our decision, so I appreciate the opportunity to be able to do that. The numbers that we're seeing here, to me, I'm not an expert, but they do seem a little high based on other numbers that we had seen before. Pastor Minnick in his comments did make reference to previous numbers that may have been bantered about during that time. Those aren't reflected here in this one, and there was a comment from someone who said they didn't see that. Those, in fact, do exist, I believe. I just don't see them here. I wanted to make reference to that there was... I believe this was discussed previously in open session, mm-hmm. was it not? Very good. And so there's such a discrepancy between that original number and the numbers we're seeing here. And if, Paul, if you could help me kind of walk through how we had this, we had a much smaller number with Heritage Baptist throwing in quite a bit of money. And then we have this number here, which is mm-hmm. Huge, three times as much as that number. And kind of how we got from here to here. The scope of work seems very large, and I'm thinking maybe that's to, dot all the I's, cross all the T's, tie all the loops. I just want to make sure. I mean, it seems like more than, in my opinion, more than we need to do, but again, I'm not the professional. You're saying that we need to, so can you help me out a little bit with how we get to this really, really large number?
Sure.
Please.
The $42,000 estimate from Pace, who prepared the EIS last year, obviously did not carry the scope of work as far as this draft scope of work does. Part of that is in relation to the alternatives analysis that the board is requesting as part of their decision. And frankly, a large part of these numbers of these higher costs have to do with the special consultants in the geotech, the soils area, the flooding, the hydrology, stream flow, all of that, that takes a potentially fairly extensive field work, and then the analysis of all of that work to come up with some results that measures the potential impacts or the potential risks of flooding and risks of landslide. Then that's a large part of this that was really not at all a part of the $42,000 scope. I think that's actually the biggest difference. That's also more work involved in those defining more specific or fleshed out alternatives for development and the impacts from those. So it's a much broader reach and new studies that are driving this higher and higher. Does that make something?
It does. I appreciate that. It's such a wide gap. It's three times as much as the low number. And to Mr. Jensen's comment, what city project, government project ever comes in at the low number? I certainly understand that. And so, as we had one, and then we have this very large number now, so I'm trying to balance that out with something that seemed potentially reasonable, and then something that is such a larger number is presents a bit of an issue. And so in your opinion, and did Pertit come up with these numbers? Was a combination of both, or this is really what they thought it would be, or this is with your involvement as well?
We don't have the expertise to try and forecast costs. And we relied on the team for two things. One was, an independent review of what we were considering for the scope itself, an unbiased professional review that we don't have a kind of professional expertise here in the staff. And we tasked them with, in a very short period of time, verifying that if we were asking for too much, or not enough, and as we refine that scope to really helped define more of the details of the work so that they could assign costs. They did also contact sub-consultants for the special large work, the geotechnical and hydrology work, and got feedback from them. So that the whole purpose of that was to use expertise that was independent and unbiased, and to give us as best they could actual information. So like I say, we knew that we were not qualified to give you a true picture of what we think it's going to take without that kind of help.
Very good. No, I appreciate it. Thank you. Paul, do you have the estimates from the subcontractors separated out?
We don't. It was a fairly quick and lump sum type investment. We don't have a detail.
Brad, do you have anything further to add? Okay.
I could just ask.
Yes, Melissa.
Any studies that we were looking at that are included in the scope of work, primarily the hydraulic and flood rise analysis and the geotechnical, those are the two big studies that are forming a chunk of this cost. Pretty estimated each of those studies to be roughly 35 to 50 grand, and so roughly that's going to make up 100 grand of that cost. And those are two studies that are really needed in order to address the board's decision. So that's in this scope of work where we were coming from is something that would be a detailed and strategic approach in order to have the best chance to succeed in compliance with the board's order.
So the difference then between the PACE estimate and this other estimate, it would be those two engineering reports, the geotech and the hydrology?
Primarily, yeah. I think PACE's original scope of work was for the environmental planning and not including those two specific sites that we built.
Okay, thank you. And was the environmental planning from this estimate, was that consistent with PACE or significantly higher? Or
it was consistent. I think the range was roughly 35 to 45.
I appreciate that clarification.
It's good. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. And Brad, based on your experience doing the hydrogeological study, and what was the other one again? The slope analysis. Based on your experience, because you've done things like this before, are those estimates similar to other scopes that you've
seen? When three weeks ago when I called our on-call geotechnical consultant, they said it would cost about $50,000 to do a slope stability determination for that site.
Thank you. Councilor, are there any other questions or comments, or Councilmember Gamble?
So, you know, I haven't been around for this whole issue either. I've been here about 3 years, but this has been, so I tend to look at it where we're at now. And that's really where I'm at. Throughout my personal view of the entire situation, I'm looking at the data that is in front of me as a city council person, saying what's the best thing to do for the city? What's the benefit to the city? At the end of the day, that's the decision that we need to make. What's the data in front of us? What's the best decision to make? We do that on a lot of stuff. And I look at some of the very controversial issues that we've had to look at over the last couple of years, whether it's traffic cameras or Walmart or the wakeboard park or marijuana, whatever the case may be. And what I keep coming back to on this particular one, it's so hard because it's non-project specific. I see a cost, and I get the numbers are high, but we rely on you for a lot of projections for a lot of stuff. And you know, God help us if you're not right, because there's a lot of decisions that we make on a regular basis based off your projections. So I'm going off of that these are correct, and I have a really hard time, you know, going, you know, in favor of, you know, hey, let's do everything in our power to meet what the growth board has said off the projections that are in front of us, where I fail to see where's the immediate benefit to the city. Because if I go and I look at all of these really controversial issues, it doesn't matter what side you're on, whether it's Walmart or the wakeboard park or whatever, there's a benefit that you could argue either way to the city itself, an immediate benefit, for or against. So you know, we've gone through some pretty hard financial times as a city. I've been on the financial committee for the last couple of years. We've frozen wages. We've had to create financial reserves to get back to a point that we're at. We've froze hiring. We've made a lot of decisions. I'm looking at the planning for this the coming year. We don't have the money that you're talking about. I mean, we already know because we've gone through the exercise that we've got a operational issue that we need to take care of from a financial perspective, the deficit that we're at. I get the arguments. I really appreciate Pastor Minnick's comments tonight. For me, it's one of the first times I've been able to hear him speak, so I do appreciate that. But when I look at what I'm looking at for 2015, I just don't see it as the right time, and I don't see the immediate benefit. Someone can explain to me where the immediate benefit is to the city for 2015 or 16 or 17, as we'd start looking at a 3- and 4-year plan. I'm open. But without that, it makes it really hard for me when we're trying to carve out equivalent amount for roads and maintenance that we don't have in the general fund to really legitimize spending the amount of money that we're looking to spend. Whether I think it's the right thing to do from a crusade perspective or not, just looking at the data that's in front of us and what we have in front of us from a planning perspective, from a financial perspective, it just doesn't make sense.
Councilmember Hanford.
Just a minute, please.
Is that on cue?
Thank you.
He's got a theme song.
So I've just prepared some notes here from my chicken scratchings from the last couple weeks. After hearing multiple people come to council chambers and share their viewpoint, which, as I've said before, we ask for all the time. We want to hear from citizens so that we can make good decisions up here. September 17th, Councilmember Davis was absent, so the mayor chose to cast an optional vote, which I have said on the 23rd meeting, if I were in his shoes, I may have done the exact same thing, knowing the time crunch. Then September 23rd, Councilmember Gamble was absent, and we voted to rescind the previous week's action so that staff could gather more accurate estimates and so that the council could make a decision as a whole with all seven of us. The 23rd of September was a sad day in the history of Monroe. It's a sad day when some citizens jump to conclusions and get so upset before even hearing the council discussion. It's a sad day when some citizens use praying over seats and God to try to legitimize their viewpoint. It's a sad day when some citizens cause a major disruption and show such a lack of respect when they don't agree with the decision made by the council. A decision to get more accurate estimates and to wait until the entire council was present to make a better informed decision together. It's a sad day when a pastor in town can't walk out to his car without being surrounded and accosted, having people in his face screaming curses, jabbing finger in his chest as they shouted and banged on his truck and windows, shouting threats as he tried to drive away. That's sad. That's very sad. It's a sad day when some citizens say that we, the council, don't listen and have some kind of hidden agenda. Now, I've been on council for just over 3 years, along with Councilmember Gamble. And, ladies and gentlemen, there is no hidden agenda. I have no hidden agenda whatsoever, and I think I can speak clearly for most of the council up here, if not all of the council, that there's no hidden agenda. Though I feel the staff has done an incredible job in preparing the EIS, the language of the hearing examiner's requests are too vague and make it almost impossible, in my opinion, for staff to accurately estimate how to respond to their decision. We've heard examples of all the different numbers tonight. There's a good chance that because of OSO, people have become more cautious in granting development near areas that could even minutely have the potential of a landslide. I was at the United Way Snohomish County breakfast, along with several other people, and the OSO responders, and that was a major, there was a lot of thanks going on to the people that responded to OSO, and as I said, I believe that there's a good chance that that has changed some of the thinking around hills and so forth since whenever this began years ago. I appreciate Pastor Minnick sharing tonight. We've gathered more accurate numbers now, though these estimates vary greatly, and we've had time for the whole council to review the information that we've been given. And so we're listening, and now we can make a better informed decision. That being said, I will concur with Councilmember Cutterback's motion. Thank you.
Councilmember Davis?
Have we gotten any feedback? We had requested, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, for to seek some information from the
AWC.
About the other cities.
Gene.
Thank you, Mayor. I did put out two emails to AWC. The first one, I did not get a response. I put in another follow-up to them, and they did finally respond and say they didn't see the message and that they're circulating it, but they have yet to respond to us.
So that's more information that hasn't come to us. Why have I voted the way I have? It's very simple. You have an applicant. And have they done anything evil? No. They simply filed an application to change the zoning, just like hundreds of other people have done for many years. And did things go well? No, they didn't. But they persevered. They pushed on. They were asked to pay certain permit fees or things like that. They were asked to do a very extensive environmental impact statement, and they paid to do that. They paid. We didn't. They paid quite a bit. They've done everything that's been asked of them, and here we are. I think that requires a little bit of respect in working with the applicant. Yes, we've hit some bumps in the road, but you know what? We persevered on those things. The hearing examiner agreed with us. It was taken to the Growth Management Board, and they basically threw out most of the complaints. They had one topic that they had a few issues with. And that's it. And now we're ready to just drop, cut, and run. And I don't think that is the responsible action to take. I think we need to do our part, and we need to reciprocate. When the applicant has done what they want or what we wanted them to do, we need to stand up and do what we're supposed to do. And so here we are with more cost. I do find it a bit disingenuous that a group of people who have caused a lot of that cost are now complaining about the high cost of doing business here in the city. It seems a little bit disingenuous, as I said. Anyways, I believe that we probably need some more information. Paul has said that he doesn't have all the information. We haven't heard from AWC yet, and we've requested that information because we also want to know what the impact is going to be on our future making these kinds of decisions, and also the other cities in our county and our state. I think it's important, and before I make a decision, I'd like to get some sort of feedback from them. So, with that being said, I will not be voting for it. Along with the good act, so. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. I appreciate the decorum that we've all had here. It's been really good. I appreciate the integrity with which we've all operated, despite what some people might want to say online. Just to go on the record saying getting information about this online is the bad place to get good information. Happy to answer anybody's questions about why the decisions I've made up to this point at any time. Again, they're very straightforward, in which case, which I will repeat, I do think we need additional red on the map, and red on the map is commercial space. Commercial space on the map. From that standpoint, I think it makes our city more attractive. Again, it's not our piece of land, and so I come at it from that standpoint. What's in the best interests of Monroe? What's in the best interests of economic development, of bringing more businesses here? And when you have a large piece of commercial land, in my opinion, when someone's looking at a map and a place to invest, that makes our city more attractive. Now, that's a certainly simplistic thing, doesn't take any cost into consideration, but people wondering, you know, why? That is one of the ways, that's one of the ways I've looked at it. I've said that all along. People can agree or disagree on that. Ultimately, whether or not it'll land floods, and there's some, you know, scientific data, you know, about the wetness and all those things that we've heard, you know, over and over. Our role is to decide whether or not to change the color on the map, and I know that can seem simplistic as well, but that ultimately is what it is. A developer would have to bear the cost of doing all this, not the city of Monroe, to make any of those changes. It wouldn't be a dime out of the city of Monroe. In fact, we'd get a lot of permitting fees. That being said, there have been those that are in the business of creating distrust, and I just want to say thank you to this council for operating with integrity, despite what fearmongers might try to say otherwise. I am concerned about Melissa Sartori's name being specifically mentioned in this. I've kind of brought that up before. I would want to make sure that if a majority of council members are going to vote in favor of the motion that's been made, I wouldn't want to have that be the end of it. I don't know if there's a process or a way to you know, have a name expunged. I don't know what the process, any other action, can we ask the Growth Management Board to? I think we owe it to our employees to make sure that I just think it's wrong in the way that the language that was used with regard to her and then all the effort and work that went in. This is something that can't follow her in her career, and if we were to go with the option, I believe it was B that was read in the motion, is there a way to ask them to consider, you know, removing the name or some sort of a remedy in that way? And it may not, maybe an action that we take is fine. To do something like that, I don't know if there would be a way to say, hey, you know, do you realize the way that you wrote this is going to affect, you know, could potentially affect somebody's career unnecessarily? You know, can we do something about that if we're with regardless of the options that we're taking? So it'd be important to me. I think it'd be important to everybody. We don't want, you know, we owe it to our employees, you know, who've worked extremely hard to make sure that it's a good thing to work for the city of Monroe, not a bad one. They all work very hard, so I don't know the procedure or what it would be, but I would want that to be a part of whatever decision we come to tonight, and I just don't know how to go about doing that. I don't know if there are any thoughts with regard to that or anything we could look into that, but I want to make sure that's part of the motion.
Would you like to respond?
Thank you.
I was just asking if you wanted a response. And I don't know that there's anything that we can do about it. That sort of thing does happen from time to time. And employers are aware of that as well. And certainly when there's plenty of positive comments that can go along with a person in their future pursuits, should they decide to go somewhere else, there are... Yeah,
other ways to take care of that, to move along.
Yeah.
Concerns along. I mean, just some of the wording in there, I found to be, frankly, unprofessional, and it affects a specific employee of the city. So.
It does happen, but we can look into it to see if there's anything that can be done.
Okay, I would appreciate that. Thanks. Let's see. This in my very third meeting.
Next week is actually my seventh anniversary sitting here, and on my very third meeting we dealt with this issue, so it's been a long time, and I know everybody's tired, and I appreciate Pastor Minnick's comments about being tired, because I think everybody is, and quite frankly I'm frustrated that an unaccountable politically appointed board caused so much havoc. I do believe that there will be an issue here. The land use, I think there are other cities that may be affected by this, so I am as well interested in seeing the AWC and maybe there's nothing. I would really like to hear what they have to say about this ruling. With the amount of money and stuff, it is an issue, and I appreciate that. These are the numbers that we have to work with. So, again, I appreciate council's thoughtfulness and taking the time to do this right, and I'll leave my comments at that. Thank you.
Councilmember Camp.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to express my thanks to Councilmember Hanford for his comments. I could not have said how I felt as eloquently as you did. Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. As always, certainly appreciate all the comments. Like others here, first time hearing from Pastor Minnick, and it was great to hear another perspective on it. From the beginning, this has really been about the numbers and the taxpayer dollars for me, and where do we go, and you know, when we come to this crossroads 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, you know, council asked for data, and you know, what are we really going to be looking at if we move forward? And the scope of work we got was, I mean, right there. The information involved, I think, it's very thorough. The cost on it is certainly concerning on it. I was very hesitant of moving forward with $40,000 taxpayer dollars. $135,000 I'm very hesitant to move forward on, so which is why I continue to support the motion that was made. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
I appreciate, Ed, your comments and Kurt, and that, you know, one of the things, like I was saying, I kept looking, you know, where's the benefit to the city, and I really was listening to the, okay, well, what's the impact long term, you know, where are we going? And I guess when I think of that and I look at the decision that's before us, it's A and B. There's really no, from the impact perspective, both of them, you're complying with what the growth board laid out. So I, from that perspective, I think, you know, we should reach out regardless, right? Because you take the no action and we're going to comply by, you know, not taking any further action, or you spend a bunch of money to try to comply. The argument of, you know, hey, this decision is really going to impact the future, it, either way, it does. So that's where, you know, I default back to, okay, then really the benefit is, okay, for the short term or even looking 3 to 5 years, I just don't see where they're, I truly do appreciate what you're saying, Ed, from the standpoint of, yes, we have an applicant that has gone through the process, you know, they haven't done anything wrong. There's a lot of different projects that go through that process, and we get to a point where, you know, quite frankly, we don't have the money to do what has been laid out before us. That's just the honest reality. But if I'm not mistaken, there isn't any reason at another time, if we had a project specific, that we couldn't use a lot of this data that has been entered before us through this whole process. Is that not correct? The last time I asked that question, I was City Attorney Lell. That was, I mean, it's all official record, the EIS, all of those documents. So I guess, you know, for me, it's a timing, and it's what's the benefit, and it's not there. But I do appreciate we got to hear from everybody tonight, which is great.
Okay, are there any other comments? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and Councilmember Cutterback.
Sorry, that was late. I made my comments on the 23rd, but I just wanted to add I appreciate council's opinion, and I do like, I'm glad we were able to hear from council on why they were voting the way they are tonight, or will be. I do believe we do have enough information to make a decision. We've asked for staff to bring back the scope of work and more information, and that's what applies to A and B. I agree with what Councilmember Gamble said, that in order, looking out and seeing if it impacts other cities, that would be to appeal it. And that option is not on the table. So while we can look for that information, continue to ask other cities, I do believe if it was a hot topic and other cities were really worried or interested, they would be reaching out to us. And I remember when Payne Field was looking at expanding, we got a resolution quickly from other cities saying either do or don't do this, and I think it was in support of it, and we signed it as a council. So I do believe we have enough information to make that decision tonight. And I heard from this council before about how they trusted staff through this process, how staff complimented staff. Staff did such a great job. Well, staff is here tonight presenting the scope of work, and I believe we should trust those numbers. I believe they did their due diligence, and I believe that is what the cost is probably going to be. So I have no doubt that the cost is going to be higher than the original estimate that Pace Engineer gave us when they first look at this. So, and just a comment about going through the process. Yes, an applicant deserves a right to go through the process. They have a project. They have gone through the process. This has gone through two hearing examiners, growth management board, and we are again at a point, do we continue going along with this? Do we continue putting city resources, staff time, on a project that I too don't see any immediate benefit? So that being said, that's how I analyze this. It's not even to me the point of whether you believe development should be there or not. To me, that's not the issue before us. It really is how we're going to move forward in that cost analysis and trusting staff work. And we're at a crossroads here. So that is why I made the motion tonight, and that's why I'm in support of the motion that I made. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? Any other discussion? Okay. We have a motion on the floor for option B. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes 5-2. We will now move on to the next item on the agenda. And that item is under new business. This is AB 14129, presentation of general fund. Diane, I think you're up. No, say that again. Diane, just a second. Let's let the room clear out.
2 minutes to clear the chambers.
Exactly.
Huh?
Clear the chambers. Fire the hole.
Yes.
Got 2 minutes to clear.
We're going to take a recess for 2 minutes, so we'll reconvene when the long hand is at the 10. We're back in session now. This is new business AB 14129. And Diane, this is the general fund. Go for it.
Yeah. At the beginning of this month, you were given the preliminary budget for 2015. Tonight, we're doing a presentation on the general fund. Next week, we'll do a presentation on all the other funds. And this is just to give you, these presentations are to give you some background on the thought process and the assumptions made by staff and mayor in creating the preliminary budget. But it is up to council to adopt the budget. So if you have any questions, please, during these presentations, ask away, because this is when you can make decisions on it. Because it's totally up to you guys to change. I will bring forward in the ordinance the preliminary budget, plus or minus whatever changes you request or you decide on. There's always a few last-minute tweaking things that I will bring to your attention when the budget does come up for first reading. So tonight, we're talking about the general fund tonight. It covers all governmental operations except street maintenance and utility operations. Otherwise, if it's an operational type thing, not a capital thing, it's done in the general fund. It's usually the main focus of the budget process, and it's generally supported by tax dollars. The general fund budget for 2015, total revenues are $10.8 million, is what we're estimating. Operating expenditures are $10.7 million, and the mayor directed that operating expenditures had to be less than revenues. And we're still in the position where our expenditures are increasing faster than our revenues. As we come out of recession, our revenues are increasing, but not as to the pace yet that we would like to see. And so we did have to do a lot of shaving to get the expenditures, operating expenditures, under revenues. There's also some one-time projects of a little under $300,000 in the budget, but those are one-time things. This is where the money comes from for the general fund. The biggie, as you can see, is sales tax. And 41% of our revenues come from sales tax. That's big. The other two are utility tax and property tax. And then the other smaller ones, license permits and other taxes like gambling, leasehold excise tax, that's 5%. Charges for services are 8%. Then you have your grants, your citations that the officers write is 2%. Well, court municipal revenues and miscellaneous and other transfers. But the three biggies there, sales tax, utility tax, and property tax, those are that's the bread and butter for governmental operations. So I'm going to talk about them right now. Property tax revenue, they're estimated to be $2 million for 2015. The preliminary budget does not utilize the 1% in levy increase that's allowed by law. And the total levy is increasing by $20,000, and that's strictly new construction coming out of tax rolls. And so that's why it's $20,000 more than last year's. That's how I got the $2,000,000 number. Sales tax revenue, total sales tax revenue for next year is estimated to be $4.5 million. That's the 41% of our revenue. A little under $300,000 of it is coming from that voted sales tax increase for public safety purposes. $284,000 comes from the county. The county has a criminal justice sales tax. A portion of the sales tax goes to the county, and then they divvy it up. And so we get $284,000 from the county, and that goes to public safety as well. And then the $3.9 million is for general operations. And the way that $3.9 million was arrived at is we're estimating at the end of 2014 to get $3.5 million is what we're estimating sales tax revenues are going to come in at. We'll lose about $100,000 because that's how much we got or are anticipating to get by the end of the year from construction of the Walmart building. That was $100,000. So that's going to go away because they only are building it for 1 year. Then increase that amount after the $100,000 was, then I took a 5% increase to allow for growth within our city. We figured there would be about 5% growth in the economy. Plus, on top of that, $300,000 from Walmart sales tax revenue. The $300,000, the way it was arrived at, is Walmart's projections, which are usually optimistic, they're saying about $500,000. But we're saying $300,000 because there will be a shift of people who no longer will shop at Fred Meyer but will move to Walmart. There's a shift in the economy. It will go down on some businesses and then up in Walmart. So it's Walmart just looks strictly at what they get, but we're looking at the city as a whole. So that's how the 3.9 was arrived at. And that's really important because that's a big part of our revenue. And so if you, I believe that that's the way it's going to play out. If you're not in agreement, please speak up. You're not going to hurt my feelings.
So Diane, we do have two lights. How many more slides you have to go through would be the first question?
These three are really important. Okay. Then I'm going to go through some smaller points.
Okay.
And then each department's going to get up.
Okay.
So
sounds good. So is this the last slide in this segment?
Nope.
Okay. Council members, do you have questions for clarification?
This slide.
Okay, so let's go ahead and take questions for clarification then on this slide. Councilmember Gehring?
Thank you. Diane, you said 5% growth in the economy. What numbers, what do you use to come up with the 5%?
Historical trend, looking at pre-recession and then looking at, and then ratcheted that down just a hair. Because we're not at 2008 levels right now.
Right. So past performance.
I look at about 10 years.
What are our trends?
And I look at the percentage increases.
And there is an uptick. I mean, there is
there definitely is
an uptick. Absolutely. And
yeah.
So, what was the number you used last year?
I think it was flat last year.
It was a flat. Okay. And so this year we're saying.
We're coming in under budget.
What did we predict? What did we predict the growth in the economy was going to be last year? Was it a 5%? Was it 3? I thought it was certainly thought it was lower than the 5, which is why I'm asking.
Yes.
Okay, all right. And then the I appreciate the here's what Walmart says it will be, and here's what it will probably actually be. I appreciate that as well. And so those two things, along with the other MCU, and that's where we get the 3.9.
Yeah, and that's. Those things I told you about, the elimination of 100,000 construction and the 5% growth and then less Walmart, nets to an 11% increase in sales tax over what we're going to get this year.
Okay, great. I appreciate it.
It's basically an 11%.
But just for next year. It's an incremental shift. It's a bump up next year and then the...
It may be a different line after that, but we're talking just for next year.
Yes.
It's a bump. After that, we're not sure what the line is until we get some real data, which is what we've been talking about.
Yes. Yes.
Indeed. And hopefully that will bear out, obviously. Yeah, indeed. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Just clarification. I heard 5% increase or growth in the economy. Are you talking... You're talking specifically just sales tax.
Specifically.
Okay, so when you say a 5% increase in sales tax...
I think,
revenue,
yes. It's going to grow by 5%.
Okay.
New businesses... Cost of goods going up, it's the whole trend in what we're going to
start. Okay, thank you.
Okay, aside from those sales tax numbers, that last bullet, that's the traffic benefit district. The voters voted for a sales tax increase for that. And that's not included in any of this because the TBD is a different entity than the city. So. It goes into what we call an agency fund. It's not part of our general fund. And then as projects are done, it will pay city for city for the projects. But we have to show what we're using it for to demonstrate compliance with what voters voted for. We're estimating revenues will be $574,000 for the TBD, and that $147,000 is going to be transferred into projects for 2015. The general fund is going to get $25,000 from the TBD fund to reimburse it for election costs and administrative costs for setting the whole TBD up and the cost of having the election. So that's it, but that I just want to make clear that the TBD money is not included in general fund money. Okay, the third big revenue besides property tax, sales tax, is utility tax. We're estimating it to be $2 million for next year. That's an increase of 3% over 2014. And that's because of the new homes being built and occupied. And, you know, so when you have more people whose billing address is Monroe, then you get more utility tax from their phones and their cable. And we have a tax on the utility tax on the water. We don't on the sewer. Storm. The tax is on the utility's gross revenue. So if they raise their rates, the amount of the tax increases. So overall, that's the 3% increase is what we're estimating. Planning and building fees, this was more in that 8 and 10% of the pie chart that you were showing you before. Building permit fees were estimated to come in at $199,000 for 2015. Planning and zoning at $25,000 flat this year. And then building plan check fees going up considerably to $107,000 from what we're estimating we're going to get in 2014. And this is a real guessing game of when the developers are coming in with their projects. And so, if you know, we hold Paul down and force him to give us estimates, and it's really hard to guess when a developer is going to come walk in the door. And so, if anyone can figure that one out, they'll be very rich. But anyway, that's our best guess. Is Paul cited specific housing developments and which ones he thought they were going to be coming in and which they weren't. So that's all for revenues in the general fund. Before I get on to expenditures, does anyone want to talk about anything?
Any questions for or comments on the general fund for revenues? Okay, I see none.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Expenditures. The big blue is our public safety. That includes jail dispatch. Does not include the municipal court. You can see over on the left-hand side, okay, that little 3% is the municipal court. Parks is 10%. Planning, permitting, and building is 10%. And then the rest are all, you know, small. You guys are 1%. Legal's 1%. HR's 1%. Admin and fleet clerk is 7%. That also includes public records and all of that type of work. Finance is 4%. Emergency management's 1%. So,
I'm sorry, Dan. You said public records were
included in administration and city clerk. That's
okay.
7%.
Thank you.
And so, this just gives you a feel for how our dollars are designated. Okay. Some items of note in the budget. $15,000 is in the preliminary budget to go to the Senior Center Transportation Program, same level as last year. $108,000 is a transfer to the sick leave reserve per the reserve policy. We're not fully funded yet. We're close. We're not fully funded. And it's set to transfer 1% of the general fund revenues each year to the sick leave reserve until it's fully funded. So that's what that represents, that one way. And then there's $190,000 designated for the comp plan update, rollover from last year. Personnel, we had to do a lot of shaving of expenditures because expenditures are going up faster than our revenues still. And so what we did is, there's some other things too, like public defender fees, because court law, we now have to spend more money. We've got some other mandates coming down that we have to spend more money on that we weren't, you know, that does impact us. So those things are hitting us. So personnel we look at whenever we're trying to trim costs, because labor is our biggest resource, but also our biggest expense. And so what was directed to us, the mayor helped us come to this, is to do decreases through attrition. We don't want to lay off, but if people are leaving, we're looking at that position and saying, are we going to fill this or not? So the park maintenance worker left, we didn't fill it. And we've deferred rehiring. Mike's department is less than half of what it used to be. And so we are deferring and rehiring that person until April 1st of next year, because we figure we'll go the whole way, because summer's when they're super busy, and just make them left alone for a while. Deputy city clerk has the nerve to retire at the end of this year, and so we're not going to replace that. We're just going to just redistribute the work in the overburdened Liz. And we put in $15,000 for temp work to help with some of the deputy city clerk, but it's not going to come, you know, anywhere near. And then there's a police position we think might be vacated, and so we took that out of the budget. If it turns out that it's not going to be vacated, then the police are going to use their reserve funds to backfill.
And Diane, just to clarify, the position is not being taken out of the budget. What it is it's a deferring hiring until January 1st. So I just want to make that clear. The FTE would not be gone. We would just
16, right?
2016.
Right?
Yes, that's what I meant to say. January 1st, 2016.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, it says defer rehiring police position until 2016. So we would just go for a while with that. Other things on personnel, wage increases. The union employed Teamsters, their contract calls for a 2% increase. Police Guild gets 5.9, there's a tie to sales tax. Non-represented, we put aside 85,000 for non-represented employees in Santa Fe. This may change, we're still trying to tweak the numbers, because last year it was 121,000, well, close to 122,000 is what we set aside in the 2014 budget. And we really hate the idea of, once again, balancing the budget off the non-reps backs. Because, you know, when we hit the recession, that was, you know, low-hanging fruit, really hit there. So we're kind of leery with that, but that's the way the preliminary budget reads right now. Okay, so 2015 ending fund balance. The total ending fund balance is 2.3 million. That's nice. That makes me sleep at night. The restricted for emergencies per the reserve policy is the 1.8 million. Restricted for public safety is 481,000. What that is, it's a combination of things. It's some of the photo enforcement money that still hasn't been spent, but it's restricted for, you know, for future public safety expenses. And that sales tax levy that the voters did for public safety, we hired two officers with that money. And so the money we collect, we subtract their costs, and whatever's left over, we put into the restricted reserve because we want to demonstrate compliance with what the voters ask for. So we can say, no, this money's going to public safety. I wanted to put it in undesignated, but I got overridden because of public safety. And so that leaves us with a whopping 51,000 for undesignated fund balance. I personally am comfortable with a 200,000 one, but we just don't have the money.
And we tried.
We really tried. And so we're down to it. So it's positive. It's a positive number, but you know, just today the auditor was hitting me up with more expenses, but I want to talk to him about it. And so we'll see. We're trying to keep that number where it is. But anyway, as an aside to the general fund is the contingency fund. Right now, for 2015, the fund balance is $416,000. Per the policy, it's supposed to be $856,000. As you recall, we used some of the money to pay one-time fees in 2014, we did a budget amendment. The way the reserve policy reads, it says to pay it back without causing a new hardship on city operations. And we really tried hard. The mayor really rallied to pay some of that back, and we just couldn't do it. And so the recommendation of the preliminary budget is to let it go for 2015 and hopefully 2016.
And I'd like to underscore that we talked about the budget gap, the operational revenue gap, expenditure in the revenue gap, and I considered this being part of the gap, trying to meet that $856,000 number. At the end of the day, when we were going through things, the best we could come up with at the time was not to use any more, and so that's I just want to be clear that. My goal was to refund that contingency fund entirety in its entirety. So, anyway, just sharing.
Okay.
Thank you.
So now we're going to hit on the individual departments. And I don't know, Pam, if you want to come up and talk about this, or do you want me to talk about it?
I'd love to talk good if you have to.
Actually, Pam, why don't you come on up? You've probably given presentations to councils. So this is Pam from our new Muni Court. I don't know if I've introduced you to everybody just yet. So Pam is our new Municipal Court Administrator. Okay,
yes.
I knew it wasn't clerk. So.
Good evening. This is my first council meeting.
Welcome.
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 And I made her go first.
We're friendly and nice. So.
That's right.
Municipal Court that's going to go into full operation in January of 2015. So I wrote down the things that I've been doing to prepare for that, and you can see that we're in the process of hiring and training the staff. There'll be myself, a part-time judge, a part-time court security officer, and I brought over a clerk from the violations for your, since that would be absorbed into the municipal court. So that is an employee that is going to come over instead of not having a job. And so, as you might have noticed, there's some remodeling going on. If it doesn't inconvenience anybody, that's mostly facilities that they're coming to me and asking me what I need. And we're trying to find a way to make the existing building work for what we need to go on. Most of it will happen right here. Chipsum seats, name tags, things like that. And I've been working with the district court to transition the Monroe cases over to municipal court. That doesn't mean we'll take old cases because there's jurisdiction issues, but we'll work with them to review all of our old warrants, outstanding warrants that are over there, and work with them on search warrant signatures and things like that. And coordinating the schedules for both the public defenders and the prosecutors, since they'll have to be in two places for a while, but we'll get them all over here eventually. Looking to 2015, I think that having a municipal court right here is going to offer some really good customer service to the citizens when they have court matters. We're going to have full-time phone service. It'll only be sitting in real cases that will be heard here. We're going to keep a better eye on the public defense screening.
What do you mean, full-time phone service? I'm sorry.
Thank you, Jim. I was going to ask the same question.
Well, for a while, I know it's come back now, but district court has limited phone service. So if you have a question, it takes quite a bit of energy and effort to get an actual person to answer a question about a case.
Oh, okay.
So we'll have people here live that will answer questions.
So will there be access, like internet access to cases, pending cases, that kind of thing as well?
Yes. We're going to update the website. We'll have the local calendars on it, plus it'll have links that you can go to get any other cases that you have pending.
Thank you.
We won't do civil cases or small claim or anything like that. We're going to try to use some procedures that are both efficient and effective, which will be allowing citizens to do their hearings by mail and hopefully in the future electronically if they respond to an infraction, not a criminal case. We're going to try the best that we can to go paperless as far as calendar printing, information, things like that. There are some programs that can be used for that. And then we're going to look at utilizing alternative sentencing programs, which includes electric home monitoring, alcohol monitoring, pre-sentence and post. That will be all in-house through the police department here. Community service will be used. Work programs, and we can do it in the city here to cut down on the jail costs, if possible. So we can go back to the jail, which I think is more. And we'll work on updating the website. We'll give them information about municipal court, how to reach us, how to contact us, what goes on. Procedural-wise, things like that. We can't give legal advice, but we can give procedural advice. And we'll put some other links on there that will lead them to any other information they need. If they want civil information, we'll tell them how to contact the district. And we'll set up so you can make online payments. Yeah. Want to pay to get online, you can just go online and let your procedure.
Yeah.
So I'm excited that they brought municipal court over here. I came from district court. I have 24 years experience there. I left as the assistant director of district court. I'm from Monroe, so I'm glad to be back in my hometown. Thank you.
So we've got a couple questions for you.
Sure.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Oh, thank you. In looking at the detailed budget that was in here, the preliminary budget, so it looks like first year, which is this year, we're obviously not taking in any revenue because we're not up and running. And it looks like we'll end the year about spending $73,000. Does that sound correct? And then next year, it looks like we've budgeted about $219,000 in fines and income revenue for the court. But the expenses look to be about $311,000, if I'm reading this right. So there's a net loss of doing the court And I think when this was presented to us, it was presented as not a department or taking on that we would be losing money in the future in the budget. So is this looking in the future that it would be a net zero, or we would have income coming in from this?
Yeah, go for it. The chief could also talk. I think he has.
I think what's first off is not included in that budget is the filing fees that the police department was paying to district court to handle the cases. So that was roughly $165,000.
It would have been if we had included the photo enforcement tickets and over $250,000.
I mean, I see in here service charges of $95,000 in the budget, in the detail. What is that?
That includes everything from...
that includes the judge, because he's...
Okay, he's a contractor, yeah. So that's why the salaries is $147,000. Yeah. So that is the judge contracted services versus an employee, where the Danny's contracted...
The interpreters, witness fees, jury expense.
Okay.
And we also have some startup fees after the first of the year that would
perhaps not
make it even out.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see in this year-end estimate any capital outlay. Diane, where is that coming from for redoing and all the modeling? Where is that located?
We're just absorbing that. It's all being done in-house.
Okay. It's all because it's not included in the cost of...
Fund.
Okay. Okay. All right, thank you.
And does anybody else have any questions for Pam about the court?
Yep.
Oh, there you go, Kevin.
Just a comment.
Over Hanford.
Just a comment. Just want to welcome you. Thank you.
Anybody else? We all welcome you.
Yes.
Just a ditto.
Okay.
He is.
Diane.
Awesome.
All right. So,
1% of the budget, I will take up
1%. And you're done.
So, what did we do this year? We implemented the pay for performance policy. That's going well. We moved the non-reps to new medical plan at the beginning of this year. We saved the city about $25,000, so pretty good. And we're currently in the middle of. We're towards the tail end of police scale bargaining, so hopefully we'll see something here in the next month or so with those guys. What are we doing in 2015? We're going to continue to monitor the changes in the Affordable Care Act. That's going to change how we hire seasonals and all of that stuff. So we'll see how that goes. 2015 is also about trying to get out of the paper. I take after the court. We're still doing paper timesheets for all 100 plus employees, believe it or not. And we have somebody in Diane's group, Sherry Hurst, who does it all, and I would like to get away from that. We just haven't, frankly, had the money. And we also take paper applications, and I would like to get away from those as well. So both of those take money, with something that, people before me probably talked about, and I really want to get into that. I don't think it's that expensive, but we need to get the money. So I'd like to get out of paper timesheets somewhat soon. Has to go through the chief and then to Sherry, that she sends it back to the chief because he did it wrong.
And if Sherry ever left,
then we would. Yes. Any questions for me?
Councilmember Cutterback.
Ben, I see that year-end you're reducing costs and the services charges from $37,014. I mean, it looks like you really managed your costs down. The HR looks like the budget's going down about $20,000. What is that about?
Each year we reserve a little bit of money just in case for possible mediation and stuff like that. So I really looked hard at how it passed, what it would cost, and we reduced it based on that.
Didn't pad it. Thanks. That's it.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I guess the pay for performance piece. I know we talked about the budgeting of the 86 or 85, whatever it was, compared to the 120 before.
Yep.
The one thing I would say on that, though, is that, you know, we talked about when we went through that process, just because we budgeted at an X number doesn't mean we're going to use that total allotted amount.
Yeah, correct.
Because it is pay for performance.
Yes,
it is.
Correct.
And in the Finance and HR Committee meeting today, we discussed that, that we gave
Roger
back
that.
Some last year.
Good.
So.
Was that a dig?
No,
it was.
Oh,
it
was.
You want to take care of that?
I will confirm that.
Here. Anything else for Ben?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Paul.
Well, I'm at 10%, so. More time again. In 2014, we've done accomplished quite a lot this year already. Obviously, our biggest ongoing project is the 2015 update. That's been more in high the last 3 months or so, with the consultant in the background that's coming back alive very quickly in the very near future before this all. We've processed a tremendous amount of plats, preliminary plats, final plats, short plats. There's been just quite an upsurge in applications and processing. And we have a rezone in process that actually went for the first time to the Planning Commission last night for the, we call it the Holder Group property. It's Dave Hoseland's land north of Roosevelt, west of the foothills, about 30 acres for a upzone. And about a 10-acre subdivision that will come out of that as well. Lots of permits for single-family homes. We have 47 multifamily units, which we have not had in the past with the Housing Home Project just down on Main Street. That's an exciting project. A bunch of commercial and residential miscellaneous permits. I can share a few numbers. We've done so far about 50 commercial building projects permits this year. That could be anything from something fairly large with like natural factors to pretty small remodeling or improvements. We've got somewhere in the range of about 100 residential permits of all types, from a standalone house to, again, minor permits. Subdivisions, back to this platting. We have now somewhere around more than 300 lots in the platting process. About a third of those either have been or will be shortly final platted. Eaglemont is one, Chainlink Estates up on Chainlink Mountain is another 26 lots. A couple of short plats that are finally out. I am expecting a pretty good surge in single family house applications for building permits like this quarter, continuing on into next year. And I think it's gonna continue. The revenues that Diane was talking about before, I should tell you they're fairly conservative, meaning that we try to limit our projections to things that we were fairly certain or were certain that were going to happen in this next year. Not getting too ambitious, but Monroe's growing, and I think it's going to continue to grow, and I think that with 5.2 and so forth, that we're going to see more and more growth than we projected so far. But I say that with reservation. We'll see what happens. So for next year, certainly a couple of the code amendments. For next year, the big one is the comp plan. Getting through that, 18-month process and getting that adopted by June, and then also following through with implementation of that plan. And, we're in the growth that continues to happen here. We want to be in a position to continue to accommodate that and work with these applicants to help them bring their developments to fruition, a good quality development, because I know we're going to see a lot more activity with that. And we're also been focusing and we'll continue to focus a lot of attention on enforcement, sign enforcement, building related enforcement. There,
taken quite a bit of time. It's we're beginning to catch up with some of that enforcement action. Some more code amendments, these are ranging from, we need to be thinking about code amendments in relation to the comp plan, and then also making some fixes here and there, minor things. And the last one, it's a continuing goal. We have a really high standard of customer service. And I should put in a plug for my staff. I work with the most incredible people. Every day we're out there serving these customers. Anything from a mom and pop citizen wanting to add a room to their house to a natural factory or a Walmart or a province. And it's I'm very proud of the way that we collectively work together in this building to really provide that customer service. I think that's our primary goal, is serving the customer. And everything else comes out of it. We'll come with that. So. Not for me.
Are there any questions or comments regarding permitting, building, and planning? I flipped those around. Councilmember Cuddeback.
Thank you. So the 190 in the project expenditures is the comp plan, the non-trend. And then the 350 that was this year that was spent in that account line is Walmart. No, what is the 350 then?
It's the 350, I believe.
Oh, that's the comp plan, all the other part of the comp plan. Okay, all right, thank you. Thank you. That's it.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, let's go on to the next one. Thank you, Paul. Oh, you thought you could push the remote. Chief.
Okay, once again, I've had everything printed out for me so I don't veer off and start discussing things such as the Huskies' next loss on Saturday or the police department's prevailing over the Red Menace so, or last football game. So, anyway, I'll be cool here. I'm going to highlight some of the things that we have accomplished this year and also some of the challenges we look forward to next year. First of all, we have three officers that completed their basic academy field training this year. The most recent was in October. These officers are now working solo patrol. We also have three recruits who have not yet completed their basic academy. We expect them to be on their own by the spring or summer of next year. Earlier this year, we introduced Nuke, a tracking dog. He has been out with his partner, Officer Southern, since May, and has had several successful tracks. Our narcotics canine dog, Jet, has been busy with his new partner, Officer Stark, since the end of July, and has already made numerous alerts on vehicles in our community. A recent search warrant on one of these vehicles found 1.5 pound of black tar heroin with an approximate street value of $18,000. A PROAC team has made at least 27 arrests in a year-long investigation on a drug house located on Corbridge Road. In August, the investigation led to a felony charge against the homeowner of an unlawful use of their building for drug purposes. This type of investigation is very labor-intensive as the department responds to numerous complaints from the neighborhood and multiple arrests and search warrants that are generated from the residents. Public Works completed our fencing around our back lot. This provides more security to our parked vehicles and those officers, Public Works, and Parks personnel that are in the back parking lot on weekends and after the hours of darkness. Sergeant Paul Ryan started two new programs this year, the Organized Retail Theft Group, which meets on a monthly basis to share information on shoplifts and thefts from our local businesses. Sergeant Ryan also organized the Senior Citizen Volunteer Program. We currently have two teams up and running. These teams assist the department by taking tickets in the court, checking handicapped parking areas, doing vacation house checks, checking areas for abandoned shopping carts, etc. They also report any suspicious activity to the patrol for response. This is a partnership with the Senior Citizen Center to assist in finding people willing to volunteer. Just recently, our department joined other law enforcement
agencies in Snohomish County to allow for online reporting. This is used for crimes that don't necessarily require an officer response, but they just need a case number for insurance purposes. The department still reviews each report and follows up with the victim if it is needed. As we look forward to 2015, the challenges our department faces are filling vacant positions. Although we have three recruits that should be on their own by summer, we anticipate a retirement in early spring. And again, we start all over then. It takes a year plus to hire and train an officer to be on their own as a solo officer. The North Calcic Growth will bring additional calls for service associated with retail, shoplifts, thefts, and malicious mischief. Annexations and new multiple housing developments will also add to the property and personal crimes that our police officers respond to.
Okay. Are there any questions for Chief Quinzer? Councilmember Cutaback.
I know you love this so much, so I at least have to get one question in. So I appreciate the work you guys have done, especially up, obviously living up in the farm and knowing that that Corbridge house was a long process. So I really appreciate the follow-up, and I know the neighbors do also. Just a question about the fines. It looks like year-end estimate is going to be about $269,000, and then next year that obviously moves over into the municipal court budget. And we're looking at budgeting that at $219,000, so it looks like a $50,000 decrease. Are you just being conservative? Is it going down for a certain reason? Do you know?
I was going to say part of the reason is that we have new officers out there, and they're not, at the beginning, they don't write as many tickets as the more senior ones. Okay. And also,
The residual of the photo enforcement
is still in 2014. Okay.
Yeah, and it will be completely gone.
Okay, and I was wondering that because I've seen a decrease, so I thought, okay, obviously from 800 to 281 to 269, something's going on there.
Would we have about 80,000 for this year?
I
think it was between 75
okay.
and 80,000
okay.
that came in after January.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments for Chief Quinzer? All right. Diane, next. Mike, you're up.
I'll come up here and see if I want to read a little bit. I thought I had made that a little bit more simple. The Parks and Recreation Department, we've mowed, cleaned, and maintained over 240 acres. Landscape and recreation facilities in our city parks and streetscapes and over 10 miles of trails. No one landscape area will be taken on in 2015 will be the new roundabout. We work with community stakeholders to support, many community stakeholders, to support and or host more than 80 special events that brought over 600,000 people and approximately 26.8 million in economic impact revenues to the Monroe area. A portion of that I'm borrowing from the fair, just so you know. It's probably about 300,000, I think a little bit over, so about half of the turnout is what that is. But still, it's a significant number in the thousands of people in events that we support and or host here in our parks and also throughout Monroe. We've led volunteers and projects that total over 2,000 hours of service, many groups, individuals. We've solicited and received various cash and in-kind donations that are valued at a total of $12,200. So, very generous people that we've worked with and organizations and businesses. So the park plan update as part of the comp plan update is underway. As Paul mentioned earlier, we plan to get that finished up in 2015. Skate park renovation, we've got the design underway for that, and we expect to have the design completed about by the end of the year. So it's an exciting design, and it moves into 2015 with a bit of a trimmed budget in parks. We aim to reach the service levels that we achieved in 2014, as listed above. And there is a new event coming along, so you know we're looking at about the same events. So I don't see any events that we held this year that said, "Oh, we're not coming back for whatever reasons," but we're gaining a new one. 2015 NSA Girls Western World Series. It's a pretty big tournament. It's last hosted here in 2009, so we're really excited to work with them again. Actually, we had a meeting this morning of staff with the Sports Commission, Tammy Dunn, and then also representatives from Colorado and Triple Crown Sports, and that's such a large organization. I mean, they're throughout the country with tournaments, and they're going into sports outside of baseball and softball as well. They're televised and whatnot. Well, anyways, they're excited. They sat down with us and said, "Yeah, we're coming back," because if you may recall, they had to cancel their tournament, the Memorial Day tournament, which had been going on for several years. I want to say we've had it for about nine straight years or something like that. And they wanted to let us know that, number one, they're coming back and they want to be here. They're going to be in our parks at Memorial Day. We have some exciting work we're going to do in partnership with the tourism folks. And maybe get the Speedway, a little bit of some more events that draw these teams from other states that come here, so they have something to do outside of the games they play, so they get excited about, you know, checking out Monroe. But one other point I wanted to make about this meeting this morning was that this is something that's fairly common. I'm very proud of the people that I work with in my department, but also outside of the department. But they said that you know, we are the standard, and this is a national organization. They said that our service that we provide other hosts, they just don't do that. So we're really proud of that. Our crew are really happy and excited to do that, you know, to provide that type of service. So they made a pleasure out of it. So it's really good always. Some things that. As I said, in 2015, then we plan on resurfacing athletic courts, the tennis courts and basketball court. It's more than time for it, and also at Whale Street Park. Master planning of the Cabin Pit site adjacent to Skyver Park. So we'll be looking at getting a consultant on board in the first half of 2015. We unfortunately had to move that into this year. This next year, but we're always excited of that. Installation of new infield surfacing that will be at Sky River Park, the four fields, and Lake Tide Park. So the infield mix is something that through the recession we've had to hold off on supplies and then just build up a bigger problem as far as, you know, now it's going to cost more, now we need to do more, and here we are. So we're going to address that. Replacement of safety surfacing for playground facilities throughout the park system. That's the same for the same reasons. That's where we are. So it's going to be exciting to really take some active steps to upgrade our facilities. And then, you know, exciting next year, we're looking to construct permanent, functional, and attractive features for that skate park at Lake Tide Park. And that's something that the whole community can be really proud of when we get that complete. Ran out of space on that slide, but there's a few other things too with small capital projects that I'll actually be talking more about next week, but I just want to leave you with this, is dugout covers for the ball fields, safety netting and fencing. We're going to address that, and we're also going to be repairing approximately 800 linear feet of trails.
And there's one other item, the $100,000, even though it's not in your parks budget, it is money, if I'm not mistaken, that is going to the high school in...
It's going to be in next week's presentation.
Okay, all right. So that's part of the projects here, but since Dr. Hoover was here earlier, I just wanted to mention that since we're on parks. Anything else? And then I'm going to call on council members. Okay, Councilmember Gamble.
Thank you for clarification. That was one of my questions right there. Was that 100,000? And then the other piece, so the new infield surfacing, is that...
It'll be like the dirt, you know, infield, the mixture of sand and what. And actually, what we did is we did one of the fields at Skyver Park with you know, a little bit of budget money this year. And so we kind of tested it, see how it was, and all the results we heard from the
what
players
field?
And from our
what field?
It's either three or two. I can't remember. One of the fields has some
one and two.
One of the fields there.
Okay.
Anyways, we got real positive impact or feedback on the type of mix because it's important, you know, as far as hey, is this going to work or did we just spend money on something that's not going to be muck, you know, when it gets wet.
Right, right. No, I mean, I was
we're
very
excited about that. Yeah.
Very interested in that because of the tournaments that we do host, you know, that can throw a monkey wrench in the whole plan if we can't play the games.
Yeah, they were excited to hear about these improvements we're doing. So, yeah, we have a great reputation. We all should be proud of that. Anybody else?
Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thanks, Mike. These projects are exciting. I'm really excited about the skate park improvements and the design that was shared. Just a question about the services charges, because that's going down from year-end estimate 2014. About $200,000. So is that contract? It looks like it's $448,000. It's going to $261,000. It says services charges.
Oh, right. Okay, that's the service charges.
Is that contracted employees also?
That well, part of that is the charges that were like the I believe the facility charges and equipment.
Yeah,
right
we just really cut his budget down.
Yeah, that's like $200,000 in a, you know, $1 million budget. That's substantial to cut. So I just was curious what that was.
I think we went through.
I need to dig into that. I don't have that breakdown, but
okay.
I can get that.
Okay, well, just curious, seeing what we're not doing without, or it might be something feasible, or maybe it's something more, I don't know. But $200,000 on a $1 million budget is, you know, pretty substantial.
Yeah, I believe it was some the interfund fees.
That you won't be that you won't be paying anymore.
Equipment.
Okay.
For example, we purchased a new wide area mower, that's the one with the two wings that come down in the middle. We also purchased a tractor and a vacuum. And those are all needed pieces of equipment and that's probably
and those are services difference. Charges versus you don't have an equipment line?
Okay.
No, no big deal. I just was when I see $200,000 down on a $1 million budget, that's pretty substantial. So I wanted to make sure it wasn't anything that was going to impact or hurt that department too much that we need to consider. You know, if that's something that absolutely needs to be cut.
Okay. Anything else for Mike?
Thanks.
Thank
Thanks,
you
Mike.
Very much, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
And next up, we have.
The last
Diane.
Slide.
Yeah.
The last slide.
Basically, our revenues are slowly coming back. They're not there yet, but they're coming back. Our whole philosophy is to wait until the increased revenues are realized before spending them, because we don't want to be overly optimistic about the economy. All the other funds are going to be presented next week. And tonight was just the general fund, so which is our biggie. If you have any questions during the week or anything, I'll be out the rest of this week. But
sorry.
Thanks for answering questions.
Ask to all of these people. Send me an email. I will get back to you. And,
exactly.
I will be glad to. Because it is a lot. It's huge. There's a lot of departments, a lot of line items. And if you want to know, like, what makes up this line item, I'll look into the parks and see where we cut.
Yeah, just
cut
curious.
A lot out of it.
Yeah.
But things like that. Whatever you want to know, we can get it for you.
Okay. Yeah. All right, we've got two lights on. One quick question. We were talking during the budget process on our side a little bit about North Kelsey and about refi. Are you going to touch a little bit about
next week?
Perfect. Okay. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. I appreciate this. Appreciate the work. It's so always very concise and answers the questions and seeing the numbers, and it provides for great questions being asked as well. So just want to say thanks for the work. It makes knowing what's going on easier and makes the decision to pass the budget easier too. So thank you.
Yeah, it's a real group effort. We do it.
Very much. Thank you, everybody.
Councilmember Cutterback and then Councilmember Hanford.
I just wanted to thank the staff. When I look at this budget, I see some extreme expense control. I mean, when I look at the operating expenditures in 2014 estimate is $11.2 million, and then you're going down to 10.7. So I just commend the staff at really looking at ways they can be efficient and conserve and work together to get that down. So I do appreciate that. I know it's difficult, so thank you.
I just wanted to say, I appreciate that. I just wanted to say initially, we were all excited because we are coming out of the recession.
Yeah.
And as you remember, we laid off 10% of our workforce during the recession. So everyone was very excited about getting new employees back. And I think everyone was a little let down that they not only couldn't get the new employees back yet, but that, you know, we're not filling positions. That was kind of depressing, I think, for staff. But we're
good again. Amber alert.
Okay, so everybody's phone's going to go off, and I'm going to have a signal. Okay.
It's the first one of those over here.
Okay. Yes, Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thanks. I just want to say thank you very much. All staff, for having me.
All right. Thank you, Diane. Great. Apparently, AT&T Wireless is a little bit behind Verizon. the other one just started vibrating in my pocket.
I got mine 2 seconds ago. Before everyone else, I'm on AT&T.
You're on AT&T? All right. It's just my phone.
And thank you for that clarification, HR Director Worthen.
You're probably using a Verizon tower.
Oh, come on. Jeez.
Oh,
okay.
The next item that we have on our agenda is AB 14130. This is titled Approval of Ordinance Number 013-2014, Setting Property Tax Levy First Reading, and Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. I'd like to accept as first reading Ordinance Number 013-2014, fixing the amount of taxes to be levied by the city for the calendar year 2015.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Gehring. I have a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Saying none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion passes 7-0. Next item that we have on the agenda is AB 14-131. This is discussion, planning commissioner stipend increase. And who's presenting this one? Is this Gene?
Council members.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I look plenty. Your name's on it, too.
I know, so, I seconded your motion.
So we have some data in here as well. Is that... Would you mind if staff gave a short presentation on some of the data in this?
I would be very appreciative.
Okay.
As I would also.
Well, thank you, Council.
Because you're new.
I took the liberty to do some research last week, yes. And I went through 10 different cities in our local area and reviewed their compensation structures for planning commissions, and then I actually made some phone calls to some where they didn't have it posted on their websites, and the majority, all but Bothell, said they do not compensate for their planning commissions. Any of their boards or commissions that are volunteer, they don't compensate for. Depending on what type of a city you are, based on population, we are allowed to compensate by code, but cities smaller than 10,000 are not able to do that. So yes, I did some research. Bothell was the only one that said in their ordinance that they do compensate, but it depends on budget, and council has that decision. So other than that, I'm willing to take questions or hear discussion.
Okay.
If I could add one thing.
Yes, go for it.
From our discussion earlier this evening at the Finance Committee meeting, we discussed council member salary, commission, for adjusting compensation. One of the things with the encouragement of the mayor is having a standing salary commission to handle this in the future. One possibility, and I believe Liz said it, to explain it to you?
She might have, yeah.
That the planning commission salaries or stipends are handled by the example you gave. Is that correct? I was thinking of one possibility is having the salary commission as one of their functions to handle. I think the planning commission is the only commission that receives funds.
Right.
Is that correct?
Correct. And we could certainly look into that and bring back more information if that's the council's pleasure. But certainly the salary commission in some cities that have it structured like that are just for council members.
Okay. That would be a possibility as well, you know, if we're going to discuss changing the stipend for them, or the increasing the money. That's all I have.
Okay. Councilmember Cutterback?
No, that sounds reasonable. I mean, we talked about a salary commission previously.
Right, and I was going to talk a little
bit. Council member issues, so.
I was going to talk a little bit to that during the financial report, but.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Okay, so what would you like us to do with the planning commission salaries or the stipends right now? Just see if they can be included as part of a salary commission review?
That's what I would like to see.
Okay. I would think anything if we had a stipend attached to it would be looked at.
Right.
And those are the only two, is council and that right now.
And if council decides to go with a standing salary commission to handle future increases for salaries.
Okay. All right, sounds good. And I don't think any other council members have any other ideas on that. Nope. Okay. Sounds good. We'll go ahead and move on now to the next item on the agenda, which is council member reports. Yes. Yes. Okay. Council member Gehring.
Thanks. We only have 6 minutes till 10 o'clock, so I'll say I had an amazing time in Haiti. If you ever have a chance to go, I would definitely go again. And also, the Kansas City Royals are one win away from the World Series, so I just thought.
Councilmember Gamble.
So I will be, I know it's already reflected in the extended agenda, I'll be on vacation the next couple weeks. I do show that on the November 11th, which is Veterans Day, that's possible for canceling that meeting. I do have a confirmed business trip that week. I will be out of the state for that week on business, so I just wanted to make sure that I have that to you. That's November 11th.
Oh, got it.
Other than that, big football game this Saturday. See if the dark decade is behind us. So I'll just leave it at that.
That
would be a lot more mouthier if we actually pulled a miraculous.
Win in Eugene.
That's right.
Councilmember Davis.
Nothing this evening.
Okay. Councilmember Camp.
Nothing. Do you want the Finance Committee report?
Yes, sir.
At this time as well?
That would be great. Thank you, sir.
We met, Councilman Gehring and I. Most of the information you saw in the budget information today is what we saw today, including the annual salary survey, the mid-year performance reviews, and the 2015 budget. We'd spent a few minutes, as I mentioned, discussing the possibility of a salary commission and a standing salary commission to handle it. We've discussed that as well. Our next meeting is, Tuesday, November 4th.
Okay. All right, sounds good. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Nothing tonight.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Yes, I will report on the P4 committee report and fill in what I missed. We met yesterday and we discussed the downtown parking issue, and Brad and the chief and Gene were at the meeting, and Brad showed us the existing parking and what we had talked about, I think, over a year ago. Was it a year ago, Brad, proposing? But we decided not to move forward on that and to let the chamber kind of lead the process or get more information or work with them. Una from the chamber attended our meeting yesterday. No other business owners or anyone else attended, even though they were told of the meeting and said they could attend to give input on downtown parking. Una, when she was out talking to business owners, heard a lot of complaints about the parking. And so they will be here next week. It is on the agenda. And what they will be asking for is that we change the current parking as is to no restriction in a certain downtown core. So there would be no parking restrictions. There'd be no 15-minute, 4-hour, 2-hour parking. They want to do a trial basis of having no no restrictions from now through about mid-January to take public comment time and to just see if there are improvements in the perception of parking down there, and they can come up with a better plan. So that is what they are recommending to us, and that will be before a council next week. We have asked, the committee has asked for them to come next week with kind of a plan of what that looks like, maybe some metrics on, okay, how do you know it is successful? I mean, if we get rid of the restrictions, you know, did shopping increase? Was there a survey that done that the businesses felt that it was a better system? You know, we need to have some measurement of success. Parking, according to staff, has been an issue for as long as they can remember. There's no one plan that seems to satisfy everyone. So that's why they want to get rid of the restrictions for a short period, try to get public comment time during meetings, and then come up with possibly a different or better plan. But we did ask for some metrics on what does that look like. And currently, right now, according to the stats, only 55% of the parking is still utilized. So there is, according to the data, a lot of open spaces. So that will be before you next week. But it was the recommendation of the committee to follow the board's recommendation and give them that opportunity. The other issue we dealt with was the RSOs, the registered sex offenders, and Chief updated us. I know that's a topic that we've probably all seen the emails and maybe talked to some members in the community. So that will be also on the agenda next week. And the chief shared with us our current ordinance, which not very many cities have an ordinance such as that, where there's the registered sex offender does have to vacate within 60 days. So the chief will explain that more and kind of the rationale of not amending that ordinance. We did talk about possibility of notifying residents. The chief will give a lot of information next week. We currently only notify when it's a level 3, not a level 2, and there's reasons for that. So we discuss that at length, and that will be back before the council next week also.
Councilmember Cutterback, I'm going to have to interrupt briefly.
Yeah.
Councilmember Gehring.
I move to extend the meeting past 10.
Oh, second. Sorry.
I have a first and I have a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion?
No.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. We are now extended past 10. Councilmember Kemp, you had your light on.
Thank you. I just have a question.
Yeah.
So some of the emails I was seeing pass back and forth were concerning the notification timelines for the registered sex offenders. Now, is that going to be presented? At one point, somebody was going to talk to the city attorney about it. I haven't heard anything since that.
And I know the chief has gotten the city attorney's input.
That timeline is in the ordinance.
Okay, there was a question about, it seemed like there was a question about definition, what constituted 60 days or something. And at one point I had mentioned that I thought somebody should contact the city attorney and get that defined. That's been done.
It is in the ordinance.
Okay.
It's not something that we, you know, picked out.
No, I understand that. Yeah. I just want to make sure that it was clear to someone. It's been explained to the individual who's sending the emails that there is a date specified.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's right there. That individual picked certain paragraphs.
Okay. I think I understand now.
That supported his argument. If you read all the way through, you would have seen that.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Anything else?
All right.
No.
Councilmember
Hanford.
Yes, thanks. As I stated earlier, I attended the United Way Snohomish County breakfast. It was incredible to see and hear about all the unity between all the nonprofits in Snohomish County and the way that they rallied around not just OSO, but how they continue to rally around each other in this county, and serving on the Employees Community Fund for Boeing. It's been an incredible eye-opening experience to see that in Snohomish County, the nonprofits, the way they work together is a unique thing. When you compare that with King County and Pierce County, some of the other counties, we are truly blessed, really, to see how everyone is working together. So kudos to everyone. It's great to be in a winning county, in a good county. So that's it.
All right, let's go back to staff. In the back corner. Yes.
I just want to let you know, I was able to be here due to a family conflict, but I understand there was an individual who came and spoke. It was generally described as unhappy utility customers made by a text message. I want to let you guys know that the water main that was the subject of many of the causes of the issues between the customer and the city, which is very unfortunate, has been replaced. And since then, a nearby adjacent water main, which had never failed, actually failed to cause the most recent incident. And we are going to be addressing that beginning next week with some stopgap solutions. Brad has approved the design and actually tentative abandonment of some of the pieces of water main that are now subject of concern. So I want to let you guys know we're working on it. This type of stuff takes some time to get through when you're constructing a project like that, but we're addressing it as we can. So.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions? Okay, and I will be following up with Gene on this tomorrow. Again, I had met with the property owner about 4-8 weeks ago or so. I understood that things were coming to a resolution. Something else happened again 2 weeks ago, and meeting with staff, I understood things were coming to a resolution. It's unfortunate that this would happen 4 times to one home. Mm-hmm. But with all that said, Gene will follow up on some things tomorrow, and then we will follow up with you on what we learned next week. Okay.
Thank you.
Pam. Okay, sounds good. Diane. Chris will read what you have to say later. Okay. Mike.
Staff back there.
Okay, Paul.
Oh, just one thing. John Mannix asked me to make a request if anyone has these forms.
Give mine right to Katie.
Leave them at the front desk. Or I'll take them now if you have this and leave them at the front desk and I'll pick them up tomorrow.
But they're already on there.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and sounds good. Anything else, Paul? Okay, Brad?
A couple things. You have a Public Works Department Council report in your packet, and just that has some of the numbers that Paul was talking about how many permits and things. So the planning and permitting agencies handled. We're working on 699 permits so far this year from last Monday. And there's 237 lots in the process from application for plat to final plat, and there's 296 other additional lots that have been in the pre-application process. So, thanks for having
me. And council had asked for a list of projects and things like that. So what you're going to see in that report in that hyperlink is the beginning of some of that reporting that we will be doing on a regular basis. We'll play with this and try to come up with a even more useful format. But the page 3 on here of the report is a picture of the new roundabout on Kelsey Chain Lake Road. Can you fill the council in briefly on the status of the flag that was requested midsummer?
Waiting for it to be installed.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's the last thing for the contractor to do is to install the flag.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions or comments for Brad? Okay. Chief. Councilmember Gehring.
Brad, there's the roundabout that's going in on Main Street on the other side, away from the roundabout that we currently have, and that's mostly a state project.
It's all state project.
If I remember correctly, the C-curb that we have at the Freilands Main, were we still talking about a future roundabout there as well? No, we were not.
We were, because that's one of the requirements.
We were talking
about the first one in, but it's working fabulous the way it is.
I was going to say, the C-curb is awesome, so.
Yeah, so.
Okay, all right. I was pretty sure this wasn't our project, and yeah. I appreciate that confirmation, the one that's there, and just in case people are asking.
So someday the state may show up and say, hey, you said you were running about there. Where is
and
it?
Until then, we're just getting yeah. Very good, very good. No, I didn't bring that up at all. So.
And, you know, at some point in time in the future also, we may reach a point for traffic concurrency where the roundabout actually needs to be built. Yeah. So
that's C-curve
apparently
it's
working
a good
today.
Thing. I appreciate it. Very good. Thank you.
Works. Okay, any other questions or comments for Public Works? All right, Chief Quinzer.
I would like to inform you reference the
not just say school resource officers, SROs, but the RSOs. They are kind of registered and have moved and they're living in different cities at this time. Also, look forward to very much next week to discussing this in great detail. I have the answers here. I had them tonight, but I didn't let on. But no, we look forward to discussing it with you because there's a lot of information that citizen doesn't know about this. And lastly, I think Councilperson Gamble is going to be greatly disappointed on Saturday evening. So.
Who was that? Oh,
oh, they don't want. Oh, no. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Any questions? Any other questions for Chief Quinzer? All right. For me, Saturday last week, I spent pretty much the whole day with Una going through the downtown. Talking to downtown business owners and employees that were there, letting them know about the parking, you know, talking to them, getting their feedback about parking, then letting them know that there'd be a discussion on the 21st. We're also handing out flyers for a 5 and 10K run and also for the trick-or-treat and the trunk-or-treat.
Trunk-or-treat.
Yeah, that's going to happen on October 31st. I also was invited to go along on taking a potential business owner through one of the buildings in the downtown just so that so they could see what was, you know, what sort of opportunities there might be there to open up a business in one of the vacant storefronts. And I'm not going to get into details here right now. So anyway, the 16th this week, I wrote everything down. 16th this week, we have two things. The first item that we have on the 16th is the dedication ceremony for the Monroe Condensery Stack, and that'll be at 4:30 at the Smokestack. And then at 6:30 is the Snohomish County Cities meeting that we are hosting. Monroe is hosting at Paula's Wine Knot, and Adams Northwest Bistro will be catering that event. So I would encourage you to go. I don't know if we have a quorum attending already, but if we do, we'll need to have notice for that. And I went to the chamber luncheon today. Congresswoman Del Bene was there. She got up and spoke. One of the things that I had asked her about was about U.S. Highway 2, the bypass. We also asked her about trains, and she said that she would reach out to us to talk a little bit more about the trains going through town, and then sort of indicated the importance of working with our legislators about doing matching projects for the Highway 2 bypass. So those were two items that we brought up. And then she then took a tour of Lakeside Industries, and I wasn't able to go on that part of the day, but Jean went with Brad. Was there anything from that to report?
No, it was just a real good tour. The one fun fact that Brad and I were kind of astonished at is the price of asphalt. And I think today they said they had like 25 trucks on the road, and at any point in time that equivalates to about $75,000 in product that's on the move from Lakeside. So that's pretty mind-boggling. And if a paver goes down, they got $75,000 essentially at risk right that moment. So that was a pretty astonishing number.
Well, does anybody have any questions for me? Okay, with that, let's go ahead and do the agenda and any sort of administrator report.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. The only thing I wanted to do is thank Council for RSVPing for the SCC dinner. We're up to like 43 or 42 people for Thursday night. So
nice.
Thank you for that. It's going to be exciting, and they'll be out at Paula's Wine Knot, and Adams will be catering that event. So the draft agenda for October 21st, 2014. We have the officer swearing in ceremony. We have the civil service appointment. And then a presentation by the chaplain program. One added item is our part-time judge will be here, and council will get to meet her. And we have the consent agenda. And under new business, we have the utility fund presentation, along with CIP and internal service funds and special revenue funds. We'll be talking about downtown parking and the sex offender residency restrictions. Under final action, we have approval of ordinance 013-2014, setting property tax levy. It's the final reading. And then the Legislative Affairs Committee.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions or additions or deletions for next week's agenda? Okay, let's go on into the extended agenda.
The only thing I wanted to point out on the long-term agenda is on November 4th, the very bottom, the new business item pertains to what we were talking about earlier in regards to staff and their involvement with East Monroe. We'll be working with the mayor a little bit more on that, whether or not we want to highlight staff one more time and put their name out there or just do some general resolution. So we'll be talking about that more with the mayor.
Very good. Thank you.
Yep. Getting staff feedback on that, whether they want that or not.
Yep. Very good.
Thank you.
So before we move off the extended agenda, is there any sort of interest related to November 11th, Veterans Day? We'll just keep it on the agenda for right now, as scheduled.
Is that a day that staff have off?
Oh, yes, they have the day off.
So then I think if staff have off that day and we have nothing scheduled, that we cancel the meeting.
Okay.
If I need to make a motion.
Is that why you pushed your button?
Oh.
That was one of the reasons.
Oh. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and recognize Councilmember Hanford then.
That's okay.
I noticed that after I said what I started to say. So
while we're there, I'll move to cancel the November 11th business meeting.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Cutaback. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Okay, Councilmember Hanford, you still have the floor.
Thanks. So the other thing I was just going to ask, I tried to catch you before you moved on, but
oops, yep.
If you can add on to next week's agenda the report out from the water issue. And
yes.
Make sure that's on there so it doesn't get dropped through the cracks.
Thank you. We'll put it down under new business then.
Thank you.
Does that work?
That's it.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. And when Gene's done writing, we'll see if he has anything else. And do you have anything else? They're ready to make a motion.
Perfect.
Okay. Do I have a motion? I'm going to call on Councilmember Camp because...
Just for fun.
Just for fun.
I would move that we adjourn.
Second.
We have a first from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you
Thanks
very
for
much.
Coming
have
out.
A nice evening.
We'll see you Friday.